Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160. That is 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. You can call in with whatever is on your mind. 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Lori.
And Nikki.
And there are plenty of things that we are going to talk with you tonight about. I wanted to tell everyone that the inventor of karaoke, Shigeichi Negishi. I probably should
Are they Japanese?
I believe so.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was a Japanese thing.
It says, I thought so too, but I didn't know anything about the inventor until now, and I did not know that he would still be alive. I would have thought that's
really
an ancient thing. Well, not anymore.
I didn't think anything about that. Like, when you said, the inventor, I was like, oh yeah, someone must have invented that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, yeah.
But I think that it's worthy to talk about on the show for a specific reason, but not only that, but I just love karaoke. Karaoke kind of changed my life, like literally. It sounds silly, but I love karaoke so much, and I really suggest to anyone who likes to sing and you're afraid to go do karaoke, just go do it. It will change your life. It like literally changes your brain chemistry to sing in front of a bunch of people when you were before afraid to do it. Now I can do it all the time.
But I feel like you're good at singing, so you might be like biased about that.
Well, I just,
because I do not feel that way about doing karaoke.
But I think it's because I enjoy to sing. So like,
yeah,
if someone enjoys to sing and they're bad, no one cares. It's fun. It's all for fun.
Yeah, nobody remembers.
Yeah, I was about to say everybody's drunk anyways. Yeah. So
the first day I ever did it. Okay, no, I did it one other time before that. But the first time I ever did it in front of like a big crowd and stuff was on the St. Patrick's Day. And that was like the best day to do it because everybody was super drunk. I just went with this guy that I had just met, and he invited me to a gay bar.
Oh, that's a good place to do it, too. Yeah, that's fun.
And he told everybody, he's like, we're getting married tomorrow. And the whole place like cheered for us. It was so funny. But anyways, the inventor of karaoke died at 100 years old. And there are some interesting things about his life, including the fact that although he was the first to automate and commercialize the sing-along game, or whatever you'd call it, in 1967, he never patented his creation on purpose. And I think that's really cool of him. Everybody should have. I mean, it's just like, it's one of those things that you should, anybody could think up and then start just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that if someone did patent it, I would kind of think they're a bad person, you know, like just trying to make money off and keep other people away from this amazing thing.
It would be a really hard thing to patent too. Like,
yeah,
how do you stop people from singing in public?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that either, but maybe it was like his specific little machine. He has a picture of a speaker here with some plugs in it and some lights in the front, which is super cute, called the Sparko Box. And also one of my like core memories as a kid was just me and my two friends that were identical twins, in their dad's basement with a machine that sits right in front of you and had several songs on it. Or maybe you could like put in different discs, but we had Hannah Montana and Taylor Swift back when she was good in country. And we would just sing Taylor Swift and we would like take turns, like the three of us.
Yeah. Like a little like karaoke machine.
Yeah. A machine just for it. That was
We had
so
one of those
fun.
Too. It was really fun.
I imagine now you can just sing any song. I think the last time I did karaoke, they had like the book where you had to go pick the song out, and they only had like certain ones, and a lot of the times they didn't have any ones that, you know, I
wanted.
Well,
now I think a lot of bars that do karaoke, I think they'll just look it up on like YouTube or something.
Yeah.
You know, you can get like any song karaoke version.
That would be better.
Yeah. The bar I was specifically talking about in San Antonio, it was like they had to have it on, you know, their in a really big automated list thing, or you know, digital list thing. But if you like tip the tranny, you could be like, hey, there's a song I want to sing. It's only, you have to look it up on YouTube, though. Like, it's not going to be on your list. And then just she would do it for you if you tipped her.
No, that's,
I mean,
pretty
she was
funny.
A drag queen, I guess, not tranny. That's not the right word. But let's talk about this guy, Shigeichi Negishi. I should have really practiced the name before I got on here. It says it all began with some friendly teasing on a summer morning in 1967. Shigeichi Negishi, then 43 years old, was singing to himself as he walked into the offices of the electronics company he ran in Tokyo. You aren't a very good singer, Mr. Negishi, joked one of his engineers. "Give me a break," shot back Nagishi, but in the space of that short, almost forgettable exchange came an epiphany. If only they could hear my voice over a backing track. That's so cute. It's just amazing. I just love that, that he was like, oh, no, I can do better, but it's just that it's in the middle of the day. You're not listening to it with the
That's kind of how I feel, too. Like, when you're singing to the radio, it just hits differently than if you're just singing. You know, it's like, we need some background music.
That's why you sound better in the shower than if you're just, like, walking around.
Yeah, the acoustics. Yeah. Like acoustics. You got the, like, the percussion.
Noise.
Yeah. Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. Also, like, for me, sometimes I can't remember off the top of my head how a song sounds like that, how you like the note you're supposed to be singing it in, or whatever you call that. So
the
when
pitch,
I hear
maybe?
It, yeah, whenever I hear that, then I can sing it better, literally, because I hear them singing. But speaking of, you can just basically do it anywhere now. Apple Music has recently made it to where, like, you could always watch the lyrics as you listen to the song, but now you can turn off the vocals. So
really,
yeah.
Oh wow,
that's like, I just love Apple Music so much more than the other ones because it's just like. The one I got used to first, I think.
Can you use it with a non-Apple phone?
On computers, yeah, but I'm not sure if you could do the karaoke thing on there. I've never tried it on a computer. Like, you could, if you have an Apple account, which I don't think you need the phone for, you can get onto Apple Music on your computer, but I'm not sure if you can do the karaoke thing that they did. And that was, like, maybe a year ago that they came out with that, and it's awesome. Some songs, it kind of messes them up, like, because it's just doing some automated thing, which is super cool.
It's like kind of blowing my mind that it can even do that.
I know.
You know what I mean? Because it makes sense to have a karaoke version that they make in production.
Right.
Because you're just taking away the vocals before it's produced.
Mm-hmm.
But to do it after the fact to a whole song, I don't know.
Future.
I'm sure it's a very simple thing. I'm sure if like Steve Classic or Captain were here, like audio people would be like, oh yeah, you just do this thing. It's very simple. But
well, yeah, in a track, like you can isolate the different parts of the track. So
yeah.
I'm sure all it does is just isolate the vocals and then remove them.
So I was wondering how people do that just today because I was introduced to this YouTube channel called There I Ruined It.
Oh, that's great.
It's a really you know who they are?
Yeah.
They're so funny. They made like so for example, one of the funniest ones I was just cracking up at was Bodies by Drowning Pool Kids Edition.
Oh my gosh.
They make the video look like they're singing to a bunch of kids and they sing it like let the bodies hit the floor. And it's like I don't know how they have isolated the people's vocals and then they don't have the background music with it, and they play that vocals with a ding, 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 ding kind of, I don't remember what it sounds
like. Yeah, like kids' version, whatever.
Yeah, and they add, like, kids singing along with it kind of sounds. But I was wondering today, how do they do that? And people can make songs completely different that way, and it's hilarious. So I would definitely check out There I Ruined It's YouTube channel. It's super funny and creative. I'd never heard of it.
Have you seen the one with the Korean soldiers?
No.
The North Korean soldiers. Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a North Korean soldiers like singing a song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're all marching and it's got a background track to it. It's
great. I think I've seen that.
Which song do you know?
Oh, I don't remember which song. It's really upbeat and happy.
Another one he did was Party in the USSR.
Oh my God.
Sounds kind of like a parade they would have like in the communist days or something. It's super funny. But yeah, I wonder how you get rid of just the vocals of a song, especially immediately when it's not made in production that way. I have no idea. But
well, like the program does it. Like there's programs and they just break down the different parts of the song like into, you know, the guitar or like the music, different layers of the track itself. It breaks it down and the vocals is one layer of the track and so it just isolates that.
But my thing is like if you have access to that data, that's one thing. But wouldn't the track be given to Apple Music like mixed or
but the program does it
mm-hmm.
like the program itself isolates the different sections of the track
like using like AI itself or AI like figuring it out or something or has that been possible for a really long time?
I think that's been possible for a really long time to just isolate the different parts of the music
probably before AI.
It just blows my mind how you can isolate it when you don't, you know, it's like if somebody gave it to you broken up and you can just click delete. Like if I'm looking at it on a,
I can definitely understand how there is software that exists that can just do that, but
It sounds almost like an AI thing to me, though, because yeah. Like, I have identified this is the vocals.
Yeah, exactly. Like, whatever software would need some sort of intelligence.
That's just, it's just so impressive.
Like that.
And like you said, I bet Captain knows exactly how to, you know, explain it. But so because of that exchange with his engineer, when he said if only he could hear his voice over a backing track, the idea for the karaoke machine was born. He said in a 2018 interview for his book, Pure Invention. Oh, no, the writer's book, Matt Ault, who wrote this. Oh, it's a Wall Street Journal article, by the way, I don't think I said. So he interviewed the inventor of karaoke for his book, Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And I'm not even going to lie, I will give them tons of credit for my entire life because bidets, karaoke... That's basically all.
So I just recently heard a conspiracy that Japan actually can't be credited with the bidet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that it was an... I think they were saying... And of course, I can't remember the source or like where I heard this, but that it was of an American thing first. And then somehow Japan got credit with it.
And I just realized...
But I don't know. It doesn't... It seems very European.
That's another thing.
So I'm like, I don't know why it would be an American thing.
I just realized that I actually thought Europe invented it, but I was thinking Japan now because the one that I have is made in Japan. So.
And they are. It is like a bigger Japan thing, I think.
Ian said that like when he was in Japan, even if you go to the bathroom in a gas station, they have it.
Well, and they have crazy ones there, too, that are, like, more robotic and AI AI bidets.
I don't understand how you even use the ones that just look like a sink, the ones that are separate from your toilet.
Oh, yeah, no, I hate that.
What,
yeah,
you that's, walk across I think, the room?
I think that's a more European style. So, apparently, Christopher De Rezor, I don't know what, it would be helpful if I knew, I think maybe he's French, I don't know.
Never heard that name.
He was a furniture maker for the royal family in France, and he installed the very first bidet.
Okay.
Then, so allegedly in 1710, I don't know if anybody can come up with a date before that. I guess it was this guy.
Well, all I know is Japan made the one that I have, so I still credit them with my whole life. Because that's just awesome, a life changer. So is, like I said, karaoke. So this guy, the writer of this article, has a book called Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And Nageshi died from natural causes on January 26th after a fall, according to his daughter Atsumi Nakano. He was 100 years old. That's really sad. It seems like, I don't know, a lot of people like just die from falls. Like Kurt Vonnegut died from falling.
I mean, he was 100, though.
Yeah, this guy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, when you fall... When you're really old like that, I mean, you're breaking bones.
Yeah.
Like hips
and
stuff. And
you
can't
heal.
Exactly, oh, yeah.
That's really sad. It just seems
it
like...
It is sad, yeah.
Old people get so freaking frail, and then, like, if they're really awesome, they're gonna just go out from a fall like that so easily, and that's sad.
Eat your collagen, people.
Well,
keep your bones strong.
I say just do whatever you want and live kind of recklessly so that way you don't become 100 and then just fall over and die.
Oh, yeah. I knew this girl that was a high schooler. She was friends with my older sister, and she was always like really frail and like also really like timid and everything associated with that and skinny, and she broke her arm by like she fell in the hallway and caught herself with her arm and broke her arm. She was a high schooler.
Yeah, because people are just like they don't have the nutrients to like keep their bones from literally disintegrating and breaking.
And that's
crazy.
Always just blown my mind. Like I feel like I've always
that
been
is crazy
skinny. I ate, like, really badly in high school. I don't think my arm would break.
But I think there's, like, skinny, and then there's, like, actually, like, malnourished. Like, you can tell when people are, like, pale. Like, there's pale, and then there's, like, oh, like, I think you're...
Something wrong
you're
with
sick.
You.
You, look, you don't look well. But the thing about being really old, I follow this lady on Instagram, who is, like, 95, I think. And she's still deadlifting, and this lady looks like she's 60.
Yeah.
So it is possible to be, like, super fit and in shape and
whatever.
You have
to do it your whole life, though.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, it for sure, like, you have to be mindful of what you're eating. You have to exercise daily, if not several times a week. So it is a big commitment. For people who enjoy doing something like that, that's cool. But, I mean, now imagine how, if you hated exercising and eating healthy, what is the point of living to 100
and then you can't do anything for yourself either. Those people are, they get Alzheimer's and they can't function and they can't use the bathroom and, you know, so.
And they're on pain meds for something like cancer or something like that.
Yeah, the quality of life. Yeah, I do think like the quality of life is like very important it gets to a certain age.
And like even that woman, one accident at that age and then you are one of those people. You're not going to heal properly.
But you could say that about like any age, right? Like when I worked in the nursing home, there was a woman in her 30s and then there was another woman, I believe she was like 40. Yeah, so I forget exactly what their story was.
Just some kind of an accident?
Yeah, and like essentially they, this is like a bad terminology for it, but essentially both of these women were in sort of, well, one of them was in sort of a vegetative state, but you could like still see, you know how they say the eyes is the window to the soul? Like you could tell that she was like conscious and with it.
That's a nightmare.
And she was essentially like couldn't move,
trapped
was
in your own
like
body.
Quadriplegic, but like couldn't speak, and yeah, like trapped in your own body. And then there was another woman who wasn't quite so bad. I think she was just paraplegic, but still like very, very dependent. Like really couldn't speak, couldn't do very much on her own. But she had an iPad, and she would do some stuff. But she would constantly try to attempt to end her life. And we would just like find her and she would have like the call light cord like wrapped around her neck. And it was really sad and pathetic because she couldn't, like didn't have the strength to kill herself, but was constantly actively trying. And it just feels like so inhumane. It's like, at what point are you going to tell this woman that she has to live this life when she clearly so badly wants to end it? It's cruel. And And it was, like, so, and both of those women were very young, like, they were, like, middle-aged.
Yeah, that's the way worse.
That, to me, is a freedom topic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
yeah. There's a bill in the House right now that Dennis Pratt is really trying to get people to support that would let people have, like, if you have a terminal illness or other reasons that to be able to have the freedom to choose to end your life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If I can't control my own body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
God.
That's insane.
Absolutely. It's a
just
huge,
the one thing that you can't say anyone owns but me.
It's a huge autonomy topic because we always talk about autonomy when it comes to things like abortion or vaccines or healthcare medications. Like, you know, you can't experiment on people, right? Like that, we've established that that's a huge infringement on someone's bodily autonomy. But the second they want like an easy, humane way of killing themselves. Cause like, let's face it, like most of the routes that you could go from to like kill yourself are not very pleasant. It's like you have like overdosing on medications, shooting yourself, like
hanging yourself.
All of those things are super gruesome and they don't always work.
Right.
If we could just have like a medically implemented way for that is like legal and accessible for people to be able to end their lives. Yeah,
like I wouldn't
you know
want my family
I mean?
To find me hanging or like I just shot myself.
Absolutely.
In the face.
So that's super traumatizing for your loved ones.
Yeah.
Women don't want to leave a mess behind.
Yeah. Or like hurt their own face.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you don't want to do that to your loved ones, but also, I don't know. Yeah. It's, I mean, that's a huge topic. And it's crazy how many people aren't in support of that.
I know.
I get that it hurts other people when you take your life, but you can't make people live their life for other people.
Yeah.
It feels selfish. Like when my grandmother passed away, I was like, I'm so happy for her. Like I knew that she, you know, was kind of suffering and it gave me, it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I'm like, finally, like, and I think it also has to do with like my spiritual beliefs. So it wasn't, you know, to me, like death isn't some like big scary thing. I'm like, oh, it's just like the next phase. Like it happens to everybody. But yeah, I don't know. It does feel like if someone is that miserable and like physically like dying and in pain, like terminally ill, it feels very selfish to say like, no, I'd miss you too much.
Or even just a lot of old people, if you talk to them, they're just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I've done it. I'm done. I'm tired now. Mm-hmm. I want to be done with this.
I've had so many older people and sick people when I, you know, in my time as a nurse, like either in the hospital or nursing home, like look me in the eye and be like, please just kill me.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm like, ugh, you need to talk to your family about that.
Because the family would probably be like, no, no, Grammy. You know,
we want you to suffer longer so we can come see you once a month.
Yeah, it's gruesome.
Yeah.
And it does seem to all come down to their family's fear of death itself.
Yeah.
Because that's why they wouldn't want them to die. Or just that they would miss them, yeah.
Yeah, or the selfish reasons.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's like really all I wanted to say about the inventor of karaoke. That wasn't going to be like our entire show tonight or anything. But I love karaoke so much. Thank you so much to Mr. Nagishi. I think that's awesome. I also think it's great that he didn't patent it. But I tried to just kind of like scroll through and find any explanation for him. I see. It says, somebody said, his daughter said, truly, the patent never bothered him. He felt a lot of pride in seeing his idea evolve into a culture of having fun through song around the world. To him, spending 100 years surrounded by his family was reward enough.
I love that.
Awesome.
What a cool dude. Mm-hmm.
More people need to just think, oh, it's so great that I brought something so cool to the world, instead of I need to make it controlled and less people have access to it so that way I can make as much money as possible. Yeah. I mean, it's not that making money is really a bad thing. It's more just about the like control freak aspect.
Yeah. And I like his perspective, because he said like, oh, like he enjoyed personally like seeing it grow and develop. And that was a direct result of it not being patented.
Yeah.
Like other people could take his idea and further develop it.
Yeah.
And that's way cooler than any amount of, I don't know, whatever money or control he would have over it. So dumb.
Wow. This is related to some other thing that we are going to talk about tonight, but it says he retired at the age of 70. I don't know if that's a Japanese thing or just that he kind of went further, but it seems like that would contribute to you dying at 100 to not retire for kind of a while. Like,
absolutely.
70 isn't the oldest, but it's older than like average in America, I think. 603-283-6160. Call in about whatever's on your mind. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. I just realized I don't have the phones up, so that might mean that like you can't call in because I don't have it up. Oh, there it is. It just wasn't up on the screen. Okay, thank God. So I haven't missed any calls or anything, but that number, if you want to get in on the conversation with us, bring up whatever is on your mind, is 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash, www.thebrainfarm.org. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Nikki.
And Nikki is going to shame us all.
Yes.
About the conversation about Gaza.
Yes, because I think this war is continuing because we're not virtue signaling enough. And if we could just virtue signal harder, then people, governments all around the world would stop murdering us and trampling on all of our rights.
Wow, that's some serious activism to change your Facebook profile picture then.
So this is an article from Al Jazeera, and it's an opinion piece about the Israeli war on Gaza. The title is "Censorship is a Crucial Complement of Genocide." And at first I read that title and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty, like, I agree with that. I think that, especially in today's world with the internet and, you know, the ease of access to information, censorship is absolutely, I mean, people are being censored everywhere.
That would definitely be a tool in the toolbox of a oppressive regime.
Yeah, and I think of any war, I mean, World War II, I mean, all of the propaganda, the war propaganda, that was very effective, especially because that was the only means of receiving information.
Yeah.
So it made it so much easier. Like, when the government controls an entire population of people's access to information, of course, that's what they're going to believe because they don't have any...
They didn't have opposing, the internet back then.
Yeah, well, they didn't have any opposing viewpoints.
Where was it that someone was just killed for speaking out against the government?
Was
that Russia?
Maybe.
I didn't hear it. It happens in Russia a lot. We do have a caller on the line, though, so I'm going to bring them up before we get into this article here. Unscreened caller, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was wanting to play a game today.
What kind of game?
If you could ask me a question.
You want me to ask you a question? Okay.
Let's just try it. Your most difficult question.
Okay. What is consciousness?
Well, that's a good one.
Whoa. That's a great question.
What do you think about it? What would be your guess or your hypothesis?
Well, that could very well be the origin of everything, the consciousness, because or some people believe, I suppose I'm still working it out, some people believe in God, that he created everything. Well, the consciousness existed before anything and everything. That consciousness existed. And the origin of consciousness is the ultimate paradox. The ultimate paradox is, of course, if God created everything, then who created God? Did he always exist? Did the consciousness always exist or not? Good question.
I love that. I would have to agree that that's about as far as I can get as well. You can't really. It's like a chicken and an egg question, and I love thinking about it. Is that all you had for us, caller?
No. I wanted to ask you guys about the immigration thing. I was talking to some people today, and this girl, she's a young girl. She thought it was perfectly okay for people to come into our country illegally. And I thought, well, these laws were made for a reason. How about this? 500 million, not thousands, 500 million Chinese can come over here. And then a couple of 20 million from this country and 40 million from that country. You know, my point is that there's a limit. Even the dumbest person knows there's a limit. So that's why there's a law. Because apparently the world's got the message. Come on in.
And I think
it's that question of money. You know, you can't pay for all these people. You can't. It's going to be a disaster. And there's no way for me to prove it. We'll just have to watch and see it happen.
At some point, I think the market would not allow, if anyone was allowed to come into the country, I think that the market would... Not allow, but naturally people wouldn't want to keep coming if, you know, 40 more million people came. It might become overcrowded. I just don't think that people would keep packing in like sardines like they like their countries too, I think. And the other thing is, if we stopped paying anyone to live in this country, as in stop getting stolen from in the form of taxes and then just redistributing it to other people, then...
I agree with the taxation thing. I really think taxation... is way out of hand. You know what I heard today? This was outrageous. I heard that there was some movement. I don't remember where. I'll check it out and call you back. But this thing was a new law. I think they were trying to pass a law that would give immunity. Now, policemen have some immunity, of course, you know, when they make arrests and if there's a mistake, well, they're given immunity. And also, you know, doctors in certain situations, a lot of people are given immunity from prosecution because they're just trying to do their job. But guess who wants immunity? Politicians. Politicians. Now, you talk about communists. You know, that's communism 101. Is immunity for us. You know,
that's crazy. I hadn't heard of that. That would be an absolute disaster. Well, thank you so much for your call, sir. Very interesting conversation with you. I hope that you call back. But did you guys have anything you wanted to say about what he just said? Or
I mean, I can definitely, I don't really agree with borders as a concept.
Me either.
And I don't, you know, because he made a comment like, okay, well, you know, the law was created. It must have been created for a reason. I don't really agree with that rationale.
Yeah.
But I will say, I do think it doesn't make sense to, you know, people. I don't really care if like someone's a quote unquote illegal immigrant, but for them to come into the country and get welfare benefits and housed in hotels. And then I just saw one story. It was from Fox News, so I don't know if it's really like if that's that reliable. But it was something about, I wish I remembered the company too, but some company laid off a bunch of their workers in order to hire immigrants that just came into the country.
Yeah, that's a real story. I forget.
So, yeah.
I forget what company it was.
Also, like New York City
Tyson, maybe? Something.
Yeah, it was Tyson. Tyson. And I remember everyone was like, oh, we have to boycott Tyson, which you should have been boycotting Tyson to begin with because they're super inhumane factory farmers.
Yeah.
But,
and they're going to kill you.
Yeah, and they're using like lab grown meat. Like, okay, this is why you're boycotting them.
But shooting it full of salt water before they sell it to you.
Yeah, like
New York just City everything gives about it's bad. Immigrants $10,000 each.
Yeah, like to me that's crazy. So like why is there an incentive for
that's the real
these
problem.
People? And it's like okay
to not work.
Well, we can theorize why there's an incentive for them to be essentially paying these quote unquote illegal immigrants to be coming into the country is because they're trying to buy their votes, I guess, if they're even eligible to vote.
I don't think
I don't think they are. I would think so. So there's just a lot of questions and whatever is going on, it's definitely very sketchy.
One thing that freaks
doesn't
me
make
out
sense.
Is bringing people from obviously third world countries. Like there is such thing as the fact that there are people that have never been around like the type of society that we like enjoy in the United States, and busting them in and just giving them money to not work is not going to be a good thing. And
no.
I've thought more and more about this as I get older. Like, it's not like something against someone's race. It's against their culture. Like, if everyone in a country is on average, like 90 and lower IQ, one thing that I really have been a little worried about recently is the idea that people with 90 and lower IQ can't conceptualize hypotheticals. That means,
I mean, I would say that most Americans might be in that bracket.
Well, the IQ is lowering steadily in America,
because
so yeah, and it freaks me out.
Someone told me that, and again, like this is just someone telling me something, so I don't know if this is true, but the average IQ is like around 100.
So 100 is supposed to be the average. That's what they like kind of set. And
that seems a little low, but
the average person's pretty stupid.
Yeah.
So
okay. So it does check out. So that's legitimately the average, but that's probably not like
maybe not in America anymore. That's the thing. Like
so
other countries,
lower.
Their average IQ isn't the quote unquote average. So like if we're just like busing in people from, I don't want to give an example if I don't know for sure,
know.
But like a third world country where most people on average have a 90 lower IQ, not being able to conceptualize hypotheticals, it sounds like, oh, why does it matter? You just don't like them because they're dumb. Well, one thing that somebody pointed out that kind of freaks me out is that's kind of the definition of empathy, to be able to say,
oh gosh, I didn't even take it to that level. Yeah, you're right.
If you ask, because studies have been done on this. So if you ask someone with a really low IQ like that killed someone, how do you think that man felt when he was getting beaten by you?
They can't even.
I don't know how he felt.
Well, because that happens when a lot of people who are, I don't know the politically correct way to say this, mentally retarded, that are like serial killers or rapists.
Yeah.
They can't. You're right. Like, they don't have empathy. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, I just literally, they don't care.
Yeah.
They can't. They don't have the cognitive ability to be able to realize that, like, it's not cool to, like, murder somebody and, like, rape people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying everyone with a low IQ is like a rapist, but in cases where they were, in when they were being, you know, like when they were doing the investigation, that those were things that came up where they weren't able to like conceptualize like the other person's point of view.
The being incentivized is the real problem, though, because why would anybody who doesn't speak the language, who's not part of the culture, who can't get anywhere really without struggling and living in a shack somewhere, which is that really going to be better from where they came from? They're not going to to want to come here if there's no incentive financially.
Absolutely.
You know, they're going to get housing, they're going to get money. These are the things that they're coming here for.
The thing that made me start thinking differently about this is literally contemplating consciousness, which is kind of funny. That's how call started off. I started realizing that consciousness isn't much different than actually just knowledge. Like, whenever you're learning new things, you are expanding your consciousness. And I've been thinking about this
topic
for years. Yeah,
like your level of awareness.
Yeah, it's just expanding your level of awareness. I'm not sure how much that has to do with IQ itself. That's not really my focus. Yeah. I'm talking about like consciousness. And I would prefer to be around people who have like open minds and care about expanding their consciousness. And it actually improves your entire quality of life.
And I also want to be very clear that, you know, we're talking about like incentives, like monetary incentives for people to immigrate here that were against that. I also want to be very clear that I'm against welfare from the government or the state across the board.
Yep.
I do not think that unemployment that's granted to people from the government or any sort of food stamps or... I don't agree with any of that. I'm not saying that I hate poor people and that I don't think that people deserve help when they're down and out. I think that in the United States especially, people are being incentivized to be lazy and to be worthless and to not contribute to society or the market whatsoever.
Yep. They absolutely are.
Mm-hmm. Why would I work when I can just collect disability or unemployment? And I see it all the time where people are just... mooching off the government and you know, there's, you know, people say like, oh well, you know, they're already stealing from us, and you know, like if they're giving it out, I might as well, like libertarian minded people are saying this, like, well, if they're giving it out, like I might as well take it because blah blah blah.
Sounds like
whatever.
A jurisdictional trap, though.
So well, yeah. And that's the thing too.
What better
and
way to
like,
control people than to
absolutely.
Give them everything they need and then they're dependent upon you?
Well, mm-hmm. these systems were created to oppress people. Mm-hmm. So if you're on any sort of welfare. I just don't see how you could be on welfare and then also be abundant and be creative and be an entrepreneur or do anything really valuable for society, because the whole system is set up to make you lazy and easy to be controlled. And I see people say this all the time where they're like, oh, well, you know, they're giving it out, so I'll take it. I mean, to a certain extent, sure.
Then they get so much control of your life.
That's the thing. Like, and then once you get so dependent on that system where now you can't get a job or you can't have money in a bank account, and it, you know, it just, I just don't see how that is a like a high vibe, high IQ thing to do.
That's a big thing. Like these programs, you can't have income and you can't have a bank account and you can't. You know, you can't have all of these things to allow you to move forward out of that system. So you're in the system and then you're trapped there.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's how they want it.
So that's the reason. That's why they're giving 10 grand to every person that comes here illegally. And that's, you know, that's why, you know.
Your first taste is free.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
So. And it's just like there are people who now their identity is poor. And it's like, why, though, when poor is in a state of your permanent being, you know, like you could make more money. You could change that in your life. But no, you're identifying as poor, and then you're doing it to your kids and they identify as poor and they think, oh, this is a fact of my life. So they don't really try harder.
And then they villainize people who are going out there, starting their own businesses and being successful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? And it is really quite disgusting. And capitalism is vilified. Mm-hmm. When really, I mean, like, if we want to compare capitalism to something like socialism, I mean, I don't think we have actual capitalism in the United States. Like, we do not have a free market capitalistic system in the United States. And I think it'd be a lot better if we did. And if the state just ceased to exist and left people alone to do their natural thing as people.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't.
That's why people have a problem with capitalism, because they don't understand that this isn't capitalism. It's government controlled
it's like
and
cronyism.
Enhanced.
Yeah. It's
government
not,
controlled and enhanced capitalism. It's only who they say can have, you know, the monopolies on things.
Yeah. Corporatism.
I just don't. Yeah. Like, I just don't. It seems like so just really close-minded to want to be poor, to want to live in poverty. Like, that is so strange to me. And also to vilify people who are abundant and who, you know what I mean? It's that should be inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
If I was living in poverty, I would look at someone who started their own business, especially, you know, some of these stories that you hear where people are like self-made. Mm-hmm. That's inspirational. Why would you ever vilify that person for pulling themselves out of poverty and then being successful and being abundant?
Because of the governmental enhancements. That's what the problem is. That's where all of that dislike stems from.
Yeah.
But
I think there's a lot of like misconceptions about that too, because I'm even thinking of a specific person who became wildly successful because, you know, she got Instagram famous and then started these courses and started selling stuff. And now she's literally a multimillionaire. And a lot of people will be like, oh, that, like, they look down on her for being successful and being able to do all of these like really awesome things, like buy her own property and start all of these business ventures.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, she's greedy. It's like, is she greedy though? Or is that just their perception of her because they're mad that she's a millionaire and she's not donating all of her money to Gaza or the government or whatever?
It's probably just misplaced anger from like Sam Waltons and, you know, the Jeff Bezoses that are getting the government breaks and protections.
Yeah.
And so everyone they see that's following a path of making their life better and becoming more rich or whatever, that they're just going to place their anger there too, because they're not getting that.
Yeah, it's just like a low IQ.
Yeah,
they also believe that there's not enough. There's, if he gets a lot, that means there's less for me out there, and I just don't think like that. In a free market and like real sound money, there would be no cap. We would just be continuously living better and better lives every single generation. But that's why I want to live in a society where people want that, instead of in a society where people just want to get by and let the government give them their snack food and watch TV, and they don't want to ever do better or let their kids do better. And process I've been going down a lot recently. It just, it really creeps me out to think of like cities that are really, really bad with murder and stuff like that. Like, one I think of that's so creepy and gross to think of ever even just visiting is Baltimore. So much murder. And I watched a documentary about this park there. So it's in the middle of the city, but it's like kind of a woodsy area that they made into a quote park. It's so ugly, first of all. It's just like hideous.
I feel like most parks in the middle of the cities are like
Baltimore's scary though.
And this is a place that's known for bodies have been often found that were dumped there.
In the park.
And it's just like, oh, over like 40 years, 80 bodies have been dumped in this park in the woods.
And it's
and
like,
stuff.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in Keene, New Hampshire.
Right. What is the difference? Why doesn't that happen in Keene, New Hampshire? I just think it's just really important to choose like who you live around. And a huge thing for me is going to be choosing. I don't want to live around people who want to be on welfare. That's why I want to create my own city, not allow welfare to be a part of it. And then you'll just naturally not see homeless people on the side of the road ODing. You'll just naturally not be around people who are low IQ, low motivation, and don't care what happens to them or their children or society at large without welfare.
And I could see like how some people, like especially like lefty type people, could see, like listen to this and be like, oh, that's just cruel. But to me, it's really not. Like, why is it cruel for like you to have standards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like I want to choose who I'm raising my children around and who I'm living around and who I'm associating with. And that's been, you know, a huge thing for me as I'm like trying to like level up my like interpersonal growth is like just that exact thing that you're talking about is like being very careful with who I associate with, like who I do business with.
I think you've done a really great job of that because when I went to your baby shower the other day, I just kept saying to people like, Nikki is a great gatherer of great people. Like I just liked everyone that was there and everybody was like, yeah, I say the same thing. So I think that you're successfully doing that.
Yeah, it's really important when you have kids too.
Absolutely. And there were some people like recently that I'm like, you know, even just like throughout my pregnancy where I'm like, yes, like you're smoking crack, you're getting cut off.
Hmm.
And like best friends, I'm like, well, we're not associating anymore. Like I'm not speaking to you anymore. I'm blocking you. There were these other people who where I just didn't feel like were in my best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly like I set very hard boundaries, especially with people who are doing drugs, because I'm like, I just don't need that in my space. Right. Like there's nothing beneficial that you are giving to me. And being around people like that is quite literally a liability. Mm-hmm. And especially where like the CPS, DCYF situation is so insane in the United States. I'm like, I don't need any drama around me.
Beyond that, you don't want that normalized to your child.
No, absolutely
like,
not. No.
Like, oh, my mom hangs out with these people that are, you know, like, not going anywhere in their
lives.
Yeah,
they're like on drugs and like collecting welfare.
Right.
Like,
yeah. No. So that must be fine.
That'll like shape their brain forever.
Yeah. No, right. And I think like the lessons we set for our children, like just what they are watching us do, I think that is huge. Like that's those things, like the example we're setting for our kids is more important than any schooling, any, you know, anything at all. Like that is, because we see it all the time where kids will like mimic their parents and they, you know, like they're constantly watching and absorbing, like their kids are just like little sponges.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're seeing you speaking, eating, doing is huge for their development of who they're going to become as people. And I think this is why we're in this like downward spiral as a society. I mean, that sounds so negative, but because so many people, like low IQ people, are raising children or they're just shipping their kids off to have the government raise their children. Yep. And it's just this like this downward spiral. And it's like, when are people going to wake up?
But one thing I actually am pretty white pilled on is the fact that there is a community of people coming together to New Hampshire for the Free State Project to purposely raise their kids in an environment where people respect things like property rights and bodily autonomy and etc. and freedom. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
The crimes of the state. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
The crimes of the state from K through 12th grade. They're taught to hope.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass.
12th grade, they're taught to open.
Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live.
Radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live is brought to you by libertyminded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear like t-shirts and hoodies are available at libertyminded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny liberty-oriented clothing at libertyminded.com. That's libertyminded.com. There's no dash or anything. I felt like I should mention that. It's a really good website. I got, just to test it all out, I got a hoodie, like a pullover hoodie that says Free Talk Live, a zip-up one, a one that says LRN.FM, a t-shirt, I mean, and then a t-shirt that says Free Talk Live. It's all good quality, and I'm really happy with all of them. I wore the LRN.FM one on one of the shows recently, but I forgot to mention that I was wearing it. And if you want to, maybe you want people to see your shirt and possibly want to know what it is, a conversation starter, if you want to spread the word about Free Talk Live, or if you just think it's cool and you want to show people that you're probably smarter than them, because what radio show do they listen to that is as smart as Free Talk Live? You can go to libertyminded.com. And
so this is just Free Talk Live stuff?
Well, no, actually. Libertyminded.com has all kinds of Liberty stickers, t-shirts, stuff like that.
Really?
And so
I'm mainly seeing like Free Talk Live, crypto.
Yeah.
And then there's also a law enforcement.
Somebody was looking at, yeah, but it's not like bad. It's funny. It's like anti-law
enforcement. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, that's why. Yeah, that's what I assumed it was.
So like somebody was showing me some the other day at a party that were funny, and I don't remember what they were, but there are some funny t-shirts on there. The one that I do remember said, "That's a great idea. You should do it." And it's such a, it's like a funny inside joke, kind of, if you're a libertarian who lives actually among other libertarians. You'll hear that all the time where people are like, "I have this idea for a business, blah, 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 blah." And a libertarian will always say to you, "That's a good idea. You should do it." As in, like, don't wait around for someone else to do it. You do it yourself. And, ugh, it gets so annoying. But it's so funny as, like, an inside joke. But with you in the studio tonight, I forgot to say, it's me, Bonnie.
Lori.
And Nikki.
And before we got into the calls in the last segment, we were getting into virtue signaling about Gaza.
Yes.
And the types of people who want to tell you that it's your duty to bring up Gaza, which is so annoying.
So this is an article from Al Jazeera. Censorship is a crucial complement of genocide. This is why, as a genocide continues unabated in Gaza, we all have a responsibility to insert Palestine and Palestinians into every conversation.
Every single one. It would be one thing if they said something like, "We have a responsibility to insert it to daily conversation," but every conversation, like, that's, yeah, so that you,
it's so,
like,
dramatic.
You're asking.
And the worst part is, like,
fun of.
People are like actually doing that.
Like, and going to the grocery store, like, "How are you today?" "Oh, I'm fine, but how are the people in Palestine?"
Yeah.
That'd be
weird. And it's
weird.
Like, the, like, shaming people for talking about anything else. It's just,
yeah,
I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. It's, like, exceptionally bad. But it's a trendy thing, right? Like, this isn't, I don't know. It's,
they're not
the
24-hour
news
anything.
Cycle in real life.
It's crazy, but let's get into it. So last month on BBC's flagship news program, Newsnight, author and journalist Howard Eric Jacobson complained that the Britain's public broadcaster had been showing too many images of Palestinian suffering in Gaza. He added that in televising Palestinian suffering in this way, BBC was, quote unquote, taking a side, and that while it was agonizing to see what is happening, there are reasons for it.
That's a little
so that
stupid.
Sounds like he's taking a side.
Yeah, he seems to be insulted that the horror being inflicted upon people is being showed to people, like, hey, that might make them not support my side.
Yeah, that sounds, yeah, you're,
that's
right,
kind of dumb. Mm-hmm.
So, and this was hardly the first expression of this sentiment. A few weeks prior, a discussion was underway on the professional networking platform LinkedIn on whether there were too many Israel/Palestine posts on that site and whether this should change. Many responded that it should. They wanted people to stop talking about Palestinians being starved, bombed, and buried under the rubble. And I can kind of get both sides of this. Like, yeah, I think obviously what's going on is absolutely awful. But I just don't think talking about it and, like, bombarding people with these, like, really gruesome, triggering images is going to end the war.
Yeah.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, we should, it's misplaced blame. Like, there are people attacking people, like, other people. Like, there are militaries attacking people on the Gaza Strip. I am not doing that.
Right. And that's one thing. That's one reason I just don't go watch the news all the time. Like my dad till today, yeah. I was on the phone with my dad and he was saying, you really need to start watching Redacted, just this news organization that he likes, because he said that they agree with a lot of stuff I agree with. And that may be true, but I told him, like, listen, I don't watch news.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I go search for someone I need to, or I naturally run into it in real life, or in conversations, but I don't just watch the news. That's a bad thing to do.
I remember I remember this is probably like close to 10 years ago now, but I'm sure it's probably the same. My grandparents, when I would go to visit them, they would watch like the local news, like Channel 6, whatever, local news. And it would be like, oh, people got shot in Boston. And you know what I mean? It was just like all of this drama, fear monger. Yeah, just like very negative, low vibe stuff that was just being spewed at them. And it would like, I don't know, it was just so awful and uncomfortable. And even sometimes when I'm looking for show prep for the show, it's if you just go like a mainstream news tab, it's like shootings, murder, blah, 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 blah. And it's like nothing of like a real substance. I don't know. It feels like there's very much an agenda to what they're spewing. I'm like, are really this many people getting shot? Because in my communities, I'm not seeing that.
Right.
So,
and it's just like, it sucks and everything, but how is that really news that someone died? You know, like,
yeah, like, why do I need to be bombarded with that? Like, that's just gonna, and I wonder why antidepressant sales are skyrocketed.
I think people are addicted to feeling that negative feeling.
Maybe, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like, same with like the drama, like reality TV and stuff. They're like living vicariously through these people, but that, those like the stress you feel from that is absolutely real, and those cortisol levels have a negative effect on your body.
I had to meditate and like do this thing where I allow myself to feel a feeling to allow myself to feel them leave. Not because I was watching a reality TV show, because I haven't in a long time because of like those exact reasons, but because during the Oscars, Lana Del Rey was so snubbed and then annoyingly brought onto the stage by Taylor Swift, and there was just so much to talk about. And then Taylor Swift she also disrespected Celine Dion. She disrespected like two of the best singers in the entire universe at once, and I hate Taylor Swift. I was getting so worked up about this, especially with my friend who also loves Taylor Swift. I had to like detox and stop looking at my phone for like a day.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being addicted to those feelings, because they're not good and they don't freaking matter. They're people that ultimately it doesn't matter, and it's probably all set up on purpose. I can't imagine something being more scripted to annoy me and my best friend who love Lana Del Rey and hate Taylor Swift and love Celine Dion, and she was like a surprise. It was crazy. It was so annoying. And so like you might not know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter. Just whatever your like 9/11 would be, that happened to me on this year's Oscars, and I was so annoyed.
So many patriots are going to be very offended by that
Colin
statement.
If 9/11 is worse than Taylor Swift being rude to Celine Dion. But anyways, I just can't imagine being addicted to those feelings. But by the same time, I almost can, because all day for like 24 hours, me and my friend were like, oh yeah, and this. Oh yeah, and then did you see this? Yeah. And like it was like it's a weirdly addictive feeling to be addicted to that negative, like I'm so hard done by feeling.
Well, and like there's like that gossip aspect of it too. So like where your friend was also in that state, you guys, it was like almost like something you were bonding over.
Yeah.
And I think negative bonding.
Yeah, like I think that like, or like trauma bonding, like a lot of people will do that too. So I think it almost like brings people together. And now with like with the internet, people can kind of fall into these like channels on the internet where they can just complain about the same things or be triggered by the same things. And it's like sort of like an echo chamber sort of thing that they enjoy.
Right. Yeah. And they're addicted to the outrage. And like they're, people watch these 24-hour news channels 24 hours a day. They just have it on their TV playing
in the background
all day long. And that's all they hear is all this negative input.
Like subliminal messaging.
And then they stack these parasocial relationships on top of it with these hosts they see all the time that they think are, you know, like their guy. That's my guy.
Like he Kim Kardashian would like you if she met in real life.
Yeah. Like
met you in real life.
He feels all the same things I feel because he told me to feel those things for the last 6 weeks that I've been watching this thing 24 hours a day.
So strange.
brainwashed.
So the article continues to say, it may seem odd that some people like Jacobson are acknowledging the massive levels of suffering in Gaza, but in the same breath, demanding the world hears less about it. I mean, I kind of feel that way too. But this is not at all surprising. Censorship has always been a necessary complement of genocide. I don't think that's censorship. I think that is just... in, like, there needs to be relevant conversations, right? So, like, say you go to work, you work at some office job. If you were in a meeting talking about a specific aspect of your job, and then you constantly are bringing up Gaza and war and Palestine, I mean, yes, like, we're all aware that those things are happening, but that is going to bring a halt to productivity in the workplace if all, you know what I mean? And same with LinkedIn. It's like, on the LinkedIn platform, why is that even coming up?
The thing that annoys me about this, like one of my good friends posted one of those images on her Instagram story that said, if you're not talking about Gaza, being silent is being complicit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the thing that annoys me about it is like there are terrible things going on every day. And you never seem to like go crazy over like my husband being unjustly in jail.
Yeah.
Not that I want her to, but it's just like, why this? Why so, this one specific thing?
People were told to be outraged about it and they're virtue signaling.
And they think they look cool. Yeah, that's exactly what
virtue signaling is. So that's the thing. Someone told them, and that's that person parroting. Verbatim what someone else said.
Yeah.
You know, it was the same thing on Instagram years ago for Black Lives Matter. You did like a black
square.
Like a blacked out square.
Yeah, because
and if you didn't
did something.
If you didn't do that though, people and you were say you had a company, a business, they would boycott you, they would cancel you. So it's just this like weird, like puppy following mentality where people just can't have any sort of free thought. And they just have to continuously go along.
Yeah, they have to
with whatever the thing is.
Herd think.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
They all want to be part of the tribe.
So a lot has been said and written about Israel's refusal to allow foreign journalists to enter freely into Gaza to cover the genocide and its targeted attacks on Palestinian journalists who are there risking life and limb to show the world the reality of what is being done to their people. But even the journalists who are thousands of miles away from the Palestinian enclave have been punished for daring to talk about the genocide. And again, like I just feel like I'm starting to get bored with this article. But again, it's not that people shouldn't talk about it ever. Like, I do think that, like, news and journalism is very important. We get on this show and we talk about things that we think are important. Not all of it is super positive. We talk about police brutality. We talk about war. We talk about all of these things. But I just think there's a time and a place. And this person is kind of, like, misinterpreting what a normal... Because it sounds like the journalist they're talking about, what was his name? Howard Eric Jacobson. It sounds like that guy is a normal person and is like, okay, like there's a time and a place to talk about it and you guys are overdoing it and it's not helping and it's just really disturbing and disruptive. Like we don't need to be bombarded with really gruesome graphic photos of people like dying in war zones. That's not normal for like, or like beneficial for the human psyche. And well, what's going on is absolutely terrible. I just think it's too much and there's a time and a place for it and
it's like if you have an ability to do something about something, it matters more for you to be talking about it. If you have no ability, that's the thing. Like a lot of people who end up activists, they end up learning this lesson. Like you have talked about it a lot with veganism, how you used to be, oh, everyone needs to hear about this. Why haven't more people? I did the same thing with police brutality to the point where my friends in real life were telling me, like, seriously, like, it makes me not want to be friends with you on Facebook. Like, I don't want to see that all the time. Yeah. And I'm just like, but it's really important. Everybody needs to hear it. But, like, in reality, it's like, I didn't have the ability to change anything. And also, it was actually negatively affecting me to be thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was way before 2020.
Yeah.
Way before 2020. I got called racist for saying that we should abolish the police in 2016.
Yeah,
and
like, isn't that ironic?
That's the thing, too, is like with the constant battering of all these things, people are going to get fatigued by it and they're going to stop caring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of people are at with you know, I mean, first it was, you know, the war in Ukraine, right? Then now it's the Gaza Strip where it's like people are, and that's like a real like cognitive thing where they're fatigued by it. And it's like, it starts to mean nothing, mm-hmm. Which is sad because it means something. Like yeah. Something is like something really horrible is going on. And I just think that these people are like really taking the wrong approach because, you know, you'll see it on Instagram where you like see a post, some comments, and then someone's like Palestine and that's it. Or people are being, you know, murdered in Palestine. You know what I mean? Like that's their comment. And it's like, what is that helping? Like you're commenting on a post about shoes.
Right.
And also trying to shame the person. Like you're really going to post a happy video about shoes while people are dying in Palestine.
Yeah. Like we all have to be miserable. And it's like, listen,
it's all about themselves feeling better than the other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's like, so the virtual signaling or like that hero complex.
Yeah.
And it's like, listen, people every day are being sold into sex trafficking. People are out, you know, like people are being murdered everywhere. There are different wars going on. I mean, the Middle
Ukraine
East
is still going on.
Yeah, like and like the Middle East has been never not been at war for like, you know, the entire existence of, you know, humanity.
Yeah, I was honestly shocked. I made friends with a guy from Palestine. He's been here for like 10 years now. Or I said Palestine, I meant to say Pakistan.
Yeah.
When I first moved to New Hampshire. And I was shocked to hear him talking about how, like, when he was a kid, there were multiple times where he was, like, leaving a heavily populated area and a huge bomb went off, like, behind him and his family.
Yeah.
I was like, it was just being bombed? Because I didn't know that there were, you know, like, it wasn't declared as a war. There's just always war. Going on in a lot of those areas.
It's constant.
Like, you don't hear about it on the news, but like people are constantly getting bombed by like different sections of Islam, different sections of different Indian religions in the Middle East and in near India. And I guess Pakistan is South Asia, actually. I don't think it's Middle East, but you know, whatever. Like all those types of countries.
Yeah, it's like right around the same area,
And Israel, so even like Christianity and Judaism and Muslims fighting there. And also in like Africa, it's not even about, I don't think it's as much about religion there.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like horrible things are constantly going on. And I just don't think it's productive or beneficial to like constantly be depressed about it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like I feel so grateful and so lucky that I have the opportunities that I do. And I think maybe that would be like a more positive shift for these people is like shift into like instead of like the guilt, shift into like gratitude. Like I'm so grateful that I have these opportunities that I don't live in a war zone.
Yeah.
And that I can just exist because I just don't think that the guilt that these people it's misplaced too. It's like I didn't murder anybody. Like I didn't do anything wrong. So why should I feel guilty? It's the same thing with the what is the race, the critical race theory? That thing where you're supposed to like be
feel
ashamed.
Bad about being white.
Yeah, it's like why I didn't do anything to anybody. Like, oh, your ancestors might have had slaves. They might have. Maybe they didn't, but like I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Why am I being punished for something some guy that I may or may not be related to did like 200 years ago? That's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, I would never put like my kids through that in public school. That's definitely a big thing that people fight over in like the house in New Hampshire, the like New Hampshire house. Another thing about it is just like the lack of principle. Like these people aren't against war. They're not, a lot of them are not against war. They just are against the thing that, like we've said, they've been told to be against. And they wouldn't know it at all what started this. They aren't going to look into it. And I'm not one of those people who is even like, oh, it's way more complicated than you could possibly know. I think it's pretty freaking simple that people shouldn't kill each other. It's pretty freaking simple. It's just the fact that like they probably didn't even know what Palestine was. They had to Google it. And now all of a sudden I'm supposed to believe that this is like your number one thing. But the thing is like, if you don't have a principle in being, you know, like I am always against murder and war and death and destruction, seems pretty simple. Like most people probably think they are. Well, are you using the US dollar? What else are you doing to fund war? You know, but using the US dollar literally funds the war machine that the United States uses to go kill people in the Middle East and wherever else, wherever they want to go next. Apparently there's U.S. troops in Taiwan at the border of China right now. I don't know what they're going to do. Hopefully nothing. But I just think that if you don't already have the principles in place, you can just be told to support whatever side.
Yeah, I was having a discussion with somebody on Facebook who was saying, like, we need to, like, talk to our local representatives about ceasefire in Gaza, whatever. And they're like, it's your responsibility. And I'm like, well, it's, like, really not my responsibility. Right. And they're like, well, taxes. And I'm like, well, I mean, but wouldn't the logical thing to be, like, okay, stop using the U.S. dollar, stop paying taxes? Like, those things would do more. Like, that is, like, an action. Like, instead of just, like, saying something, that's, like, a legitimate action to try to stop what is going on. And it's just such a weird stance to be, like, well, it's your responsibility.
I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and it's also, like, okay, I'm going to call a state rep that lives in New Hampshire.
They can't do anything about it.
Wait, what are they going to do?
Right.
What are they going to do about what's going on in Palestine and Israel?
I saw a story today about how they're supposed to get these weapons that they're sending over approved by Congress, but they've been sending through a loophole just under the amount where they have to have it approved each time so that they can just do it anyway.
Yeah, what a joke.
Yeah.
603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call to bring up whatever's on your mind. 603-283-6160. More Free Talk Live coming up.
Hi, I'm Derek J. To me, an activist's calling is to actively work to advance a cause. The cause for which I work is personal freedom. I believe my life is best when I engage in voluntary interactions and self-government. I reject the idea that anyone else has a higher claim to my life or my body than I do. I see people who call themselves the government as a threat to my personal freedom. I realize you may feel differently, but my relationship with the people who call themselves the government is completely involuntary. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Control 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites? Our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive.com can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. Social.freetalklive.com. And with you on Free Talk Live today, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Nikki.
And this, according to the Wall Street Journal, Gen Z is America's most disillusioned group as far as voting is concerned. Huh. And I think that's actually a really great and amazing thing. Colin is also on Wednesdays with us sometimes, and he is always claiming that he thinks millennials are the most libertarian group. And I'm not saying that this necessarily equates to being libertarian, but it does seem that they trust the government less than any other generation, according to these studies.
Yeah.
So, and that's honestly, every time Colin says that, I'm like, I really don't see that about your generation. I'm literally, I'm supposed to be the last year of millennial, but I reject that. It's not because I don't like millennials. It just doesn't apply to me. But Gen Z doesn't 100% apply to me either.
I think the whole generation thing is just so dumb. I feel like people like talk about it a lot. You know, and it, like, okay, yeah, breaking up age groups, like that makes sense to a certain extent. But I feel like sometimes people get a little too into it where they're like, millennials blank.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but like we're talking about millions of people here. It's hard to produce blanket statements. And of course, you know, we can go into the statistics of it and say like, okay, well, this age group is more likely to be this, you know, whatever.
I also think you would just relate more to your generation if you're born smack dab in the middle. But yeah. I can't. I am nothing like a millennial who was born in the 80s.
Right.
And I'm also nothing like a Gen Zer who was born like 2010. Like,
that's the thing. It's too big of an age gap.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm a millennial. You're a millennial. Nowhere near each other in age. Like, we didn't grow up with the same experiences.
Yeah, I grew up with the internet.
And me and Bonnie are, what, 2 years apart? And we're in different generations?
Supposedly,
it just doesn't make sense.
You graduated high school before me, and I'm supposedly a millennial, and you're Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. It's not because I want to be the younger one either, although that would be nice. The other day, I ran into a group. I keep telling people this story because it was so wholesome and funny and cute. But so there was a man, he opened the elevator, but he was like, "You guys all go in," and it was like a soccer team of like 13-year-old girls, and I was the same height as all of them, and I just like kind of camouflaged with them and went ahead, and I said to them when the door shut, I was like, "I just like blended in with you guys to get in here," and they were like they were just giggling, and then they're like, "We're all sisters," and I was like, "Really?" And they were like laughing so hard. They're like, no, I wish. And I was just like, oh, I'm more gullible than 20, 13-year-old girls. I don't know why I completely believed them. I guess I'm too trusting. But I just say that because I was thinking, wow, they're the same height as me. That's all. And they're probably Gen Z. And they probably think I'm a silly boomer.
Yeah, right.
I believed them for that.
They're like, haha.
Yeah, we got the boomer. Anyways, Gen Z is supposedly the most disillusioned group of voters, and I can't think of anything except that being a good thing. The subtitle here says, young adults are more skeptical of government and pessimistic about the future. That part seems a little bad. Being pessimistic about the future doesn't seem like a good thing, but...
it's hard not to be.
Maybe they're smarter because of that. Callie Gaddy was a college senior when the pandemic abruptly upended her life plans. Wait, how the heck is she Gen Z? I better be considered Gen Z because I was not a high school senior. But then again, I meant to say college senior. But then again, people like go in early and like your friend that was a master's degree or at least bachelor's at 21. So I don't know. Anyways. Callie Gaddy was a college senior when the pandemic abruptly upended her life plans and made her part of a big and deeply unhappy political force that figures to play a huge role in the 2024 election season. Her graduation was postponed, and that's so sad, so she was let go from her college job and her summer internship got canceled. She spent the final months of school taking online classes from her parents' house. You would think that there's a plan B or a safety net, she said, but there's actually not. Today, Gaddy, 25, works as an office manager in Atlanta, earning less than $35,000 a year. In her spare time, she uploads videos to TikTok, where she's amassed thousands of followers. Now that's at risk of being taken away, too. Yeah, that sucks. They're trying to make China either sell TikTok to the U.S. or they will ban it in the U.S.
Why?
Their whole thing is, oh, well, it's basically owned by China, so China is getting data about American citizens from it. And it's ridiculous. I think it's ultimately a money grab.
Yeah.
Americans want to own TikTok, obviously. So the thing isn't like they want to make an American buy it. It's that it must be sold to someone other than the Chinese government. But I think that just sounds... There are already, like, huge groups that are like, we're interested in buying it. It seems like there's somebody who was chosen to get to buy it. I really hope that doesn't go through, but I mean the bill might not go through at all. But apparently Biden is in favor of it. Really, really weird thing. Biden and Trump are both in favor of this stealing TikTok or forcing the TikTok The thing is, there is a thing called, and I can't remember what it's called, like Big Bite, something like that, that owns Dance Bite or something like that, that owns TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
But every company in China is basically owned by China. So their whole thing is, oh, well, it has to be sold to a company that isn't, you know, like controlled by China, because you're basically giving your data to China, which is should be people's choice.
Isn't every company cares? In America kind of just owned by the United States government?
Yeah. If it's a corporation.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
They're just hypocrites.
Yeah, okay.
So they're done. It says, now that's at risk of being taken away too. All of this has left her dejected and increasingly skeptical of politicians.
Well, yeah.
Well, as she should be.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully it's not in the wrong for the wrong reasons. It says, young adults in Generation Z, those born in 1997 or after, have emerged from the pandemic feeling more disillusioned than any living generation before them. According to long-running surveys and interviews with dozens of young people around the country, they worry they'll never make enough money to attain the security previous generations have achieved, which is kind of like a skill issue. Like, don't sit around worrying
about
also,
that. I mean, that's pretty valid with the state of the economy.
Like, inflation, you know what I mean? And
stuff. Yeah.
But I worry never helps anything.
Yeah.
Citing their delayed launch into adulthood, which that's completely valid, actually, because I was like, you know what? I'm finally going to, like, things all worked out for me totally fine. But it could have been pretty annoying because I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to college and I sign up for college. Oh, yeah. That's another reason this person would be a senior, because I started super freaking late, like 4 years, 3 years out of high school. Yeah, that all adds up now. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to college, and I signed up, and I was actually getting excited. I was like, you know, I'll go to a campus, it was just going to be community college, and like maybe meet people and like actually be in a class again. That might be and then like the pandemic happened. That was really annoying, actually, and they were going to make me take classes online for IT. I mean, I did it for half a semester, and then I quit because I met Mr. Penguin, or a former show host. He still does the show sometimes. And he told me, you can learn anything about IT on YouTube. So I was like,
that's funny. That's why you dropped out of college.
I was already thinking about it, too, because the girl who I was like sharing a room with at the time dropped out of college. And she was always like on the phone talking to her dad about it. And she was like, you know, I just feel so free. I just feel like, I was like, that sounds great. And it just was like somebody mentioned one thing. I was like, I'm doing it. Like,
yeah.
One like and I'll drop out of college.
I was actually just talking about that the other day, how you can learn anything mm-hmm. online, or even say you wanted to go to college. You can just go walk into a college lecture and sit down.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you can, but you just don't get any diploma. Like credit for it.
Right.
Wow.
But what is the value of the credit? And that's right. Why it's so, because so many people will like.
The knowledge is what's valuable.
I would have thought they would like try to kick you out. No. I've never heard
no,
of
they
that.
Don't care. Yeah, and
they don't take attendance, you know, you just go in and sit down and take yeah. your class.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Especially like with the bigger schools yeah. where it's like there's like hundreds of people. They mm-hmm. don't know. They don't right. know who's in there.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Right.
I have never heard that because recently I've been thinking like, oh, it'd be kind of fun to take a college class about like I don't even know if
yeah,
Keene State has like
yeah, right there, just you
certain
know,
things, but
look
wow.
up the schedule.
So, we do have a caller on the line. Dave Ridley from New Hampshire. Dave, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Yeah, that's record turnaround. I don't think I was on hold for more than 10 seconds.
Nice. I'm glad.
So, I have a concern regarding the setup at the TSA checkpoint in Boston Logan Airport near New Hampshire.
Oh, Bradley Logan, isn't that, are you mixing, or am I mixing things up?
Boston is Logan. Yeah.
Oh, Boston's called Logan. Okay, so the Boston airport, what's wrong with the setup of the TSA there?
Well, this is the one next to the United Terminal. And I've run into this, I guess, two or three times. I fly back to Colorado Springs sometimes. So the way they've got it set up, when you leave the United kiosks, it's not United Terminal, but United kiosks, you wind up walking toward the TSA checkpoint, right? And so they have a little place where people can enter the checkpoint. Oh, but only if they're TSA approved, you know, or what, early check or what, pre-check, whatever they call it.
Pre-check, yeah, something
and,
like that.
Yeah, so no problem. I guess I'll just go into the normal line. Oh, to get to the normal line, you have to walk an eighth of a mile. So you wind up walking all the way around. You walk past the checkpoint, And then you just keep walking, and the checkpoint gets further and further behind you, and eventually you're allowed to turn around and come back toward the checkpoint. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so is this organized, or I'm trying to think of the word, separated by these little ropes, and they won't let you go under the little ropes kind of thing?
Well, if it had ropes, I would have gone under the ropes.
Oh,
but
yeah?
What it has instead is like an Olympic hurdle you have to jump over.
Wow.
If you want to take the shortcut, right?
That's terrible.
And there's hardly anyone. There's oftentimes not that many people, and there'll be like, you know, 10 or 20 people in line, but the line is, it's like it's set up for 1,000 people, right? So when you're not dealing with a large number of people, you could just go straight over the checkpoint. Instead, no, go this way. Even if you're using a cane, even if you're using a wheelchair, go all the way around this thing and then come back, right? So for once, I don't usually do this when I'm traveling, but I went ahead and whipped out a camera and did a bunch of ambush interviews with various TSA people who just happened to be in front of me. And so you can just watch the video and just see for yourself, you know, a little bit about how far the walk is and how they reacted to my questions about it.
So you ask, do they have any like sense of self-responsibility, or are they just saying like, oh, well, it's not in our hands. We didn't set it up, blah, blah, blah.
Well, first of all, to their credit, they didn't threaten me over filming. They didn't respond in a hostile manner to me when I started questioning them. One of the bureaucrats said, that's not our thing. I can't remember if he said it was United's fault or the airport's fault. He said, quote unquote, we don't have a problem. I think they do. I mean, it's inconvenient for me to walk around it. And I've observed it 3 times now. And, you know, what happens to people who have mobility issues or people who are late for their flight?
What's even the reason? What would be the reason? Like, just so they can have a longer line? It seems pretty stupid.
The way a lot of airports are set up is just really stupid, and it doesn't make sense.
It probably has something to do with government being involved with these corporations. Is that all you had for us, Ridley?
That's it.
Thank you for your call. You can go to RidleyReport.com and look up his videos he referenced there of his interviews of the TSA agents. We have another caller on the line, unscreened caller. You're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. What's on my mind has to do with what you were talking about prior to the TSA setup here, and that's with the whole COVID and how it kind of affected, you know, a couple plans that, you know, young people had.
Yeah.
When they were in school. So yeah. So fortunately, I was done with education many years before this, you know, Fauci, you know, the whole Fauci gate thing started. But I can attest, working in industries, I do seem to see like some sort of like, you know, effects of COVID, not so much related to this girl's plans, but I want to say like intellectually, from an IQ perspective, it's really bad. It's like, it's dipped. A lot of these people seem to, you know, game the system. What does that mean? Basically, they seem to study for the interview, but when you ask them something spontaneous, meaning off, you know, the top of your head, they freeze and they can't critically think.
Wow.
And so critical thinking, right, is like something that, you know, comes to you through trial and error, but eventually if you stick with it, like you get it. And critical thinking applies to everything you do in your life, not just in school. But when this whole Fauci thing started, you know, classes from your parents' house or, you know, wherever, you had access to the internet, what did that introduce? You know, it introduced the high likelihood or possibilities of cheating and whatnot. And so I think, you know, 4 years later, right, which is hard to believe, 4 years after this Fauci gate nonsense, you start to see the effect of these young people that are now, you know, something along the lines of 22, 23, 24, and trying to get into the labor force. And unfortunately for some, you know, they might be able to game the system, but we find out, you know, a couple months later that this person is not who we kind of thought they were.
Is it like possibly like they're using AI to try to do their work? Do you ever find that?
It's a combination, especially now with the boom, right, of the, you know, the open AI and so forth. But even before, it was just a matter of you know, just using the internet and not really using your mind. No, fair game. The real world, you use your mind and the internet, but the skill of critical thinking is, you know, using your own brain.
What kind of industry have you seen this in, if you don't mind saying?
Yeah, so this is in the applied mathematical finance or economics. So what does this basically mean? Basically, the job that we do is help clients identify risk in numerous portfolios, and this has to do with, like, you know, likelihood of default and how much they'd be on the hook if suddenly, you know, people started defaulting. And so what we do that requires critical thinking is a lot of stats. And so stats, you know, it's taught, and it comes to you over time. You start to realize what sort of methods, techniques, procedures are appropriate in the area of finance or economics. It should be natural to you, and that's just because the way that the education system used to be, right? You used to get a series of problem sets. The professors used to make these exams very difficult and made you fail, but they curved. But at the end of the day, it's so that you actually learn, you know, these difficult concepts and get a good general idea how to apply them in the real world. Now you know, you still have that system, but now you have, you know, a bunch of tools to kind of, you know, eliminate that critical thinking that used to be required. Not to say that they don't think today, but what I'm saying is, with the access of, you know, the internet introduced in a bunch of exams or hybrid courses, online courses, you know, the revolution of AI, these guys are just pumping in, hey, what do I do here? And sometimes the AI is good, sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes the internet, some random forum is good, sometimes it's not. But it definitely does not beat old school, you know, critical thinking, which requires a lot of, you know, effort on the individual. And so all this to say, you know, I really do feel that this Fauci gate, as I like to call it, did a lot of things that were really bad, not just to young people, but to people in general, mental health. And, you know, from an IQ perspective, it just introduced a lot of likelihood of, you know, at least in education, like I was saying, just using things that really eliminate critical thinking. And so it's an unfortunate thing to see. And unfortunately, you know, this Fauci character, nowhere to be heard these days, which is ironic. True. And if you mention his name, and you mention anything that I just said, or what the previous discussion was all about, you know, unfortunately, you get called a Trumper, you know, anti-science guy, or, you know, something like this. But I think, you know, this is a terrible thing he's done.
And that's a good point. That does affect, like, everyone, not just the young people who went through losing their ability to think critically. It affects everyone, because, like, if I wanted somebody to be watching out for my portfolios, I'd want them to be able to think critically and not just try to game the system, like you're saying. That's something I hadn't really thought about, that young people might be doing more of that just because of the fact that they were able to get through school that way. That's actually pretty scary to think of, that people who are actually, you know, doing jobs that affect other people and the economy and people's bank accounts or whatever, like other jobs too, might just be unable to actually think for themselves and, you know, solve problems. I've definitely seen it just in, like, service industry. I think people are just lazier now and care less about other people. I've seen that people have become more antisocial. And thank you so much for the call. Caller is very interesting subject. I hadn't really thought of it, because, like, a lot of times I do feel, I think a lot about how the young people's lives were ruined during COVID, because it happened to me. I was 23 when it started, and, or maybe even 22 when it started, but, it was not a good time for me, but it has affected people's lives in general just because of the way that it affected society. And that has a lot to do with what we were talking about even at the beginning of the show. If the IQ drops in a country, that's like a terrible thing for everyone involved, because, like we were saying, if you are really low IQ, you're going to be having a lot harder time empathizing with people and being productive. And I just think the Fauci nonsense, the COVID measures, because in general, it wasn't actually COVID, the disease, that did that kind of stuff to people.
Of course not.
It was the measures the government put in place, quote unquote, due to COVID.
I think that the internet has caused, not even just for young people, but for people in general, a lot of intellectual laziness.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like they just scroll TikTok or whatever and just watch videos and don't think and don't do anything.
Yeah. Well, even in regards to schooling, one of my friends still has a younger cousin that is in high school. Hmm. And she, I forget what subject it was, but I think it might have been math or something. I don't know. But essentially she was telling her like, oh, well, yeah, like everyone just cheats in high school now. Like it has never been easier. Like no one does any work. You can implement AI. She's like, oh, like I wish I could remember more of the context. But she was, my friend recently went back to college and was like, oh, wow, this thing is so hard. And her little cousin was like, what do you mean? Just ChatGPT it.
Wow.
And she was like, oh my gosh, I would have never thought of that, because she's like, the last time I was in school, that wasn't a thing. Like that didn't even exist. But it's kind of sad that, I mean, I'm sure all of the high schoolers are doing that nowadays.
It makes sense when you're only going to school to get a diploma or a degree to cheat. It makes sense, honestly. But if you're actually there to learn, it makes no sense to think
to use AI. Yeah, but there's really nothing to learn in high school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely high school.
Yeah, public schools aren't teaching you anything useful. Yeah. Like, maybe when you're a little kid and you're learning your ABCs and how to count and all that stuff.
Yeah, but I think people... But
you could just teach that
to
your kids
yourself. They're failing the kids at that anyway. Yeah. They're doing a pretty bad job at it anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So, it is kind of sad. I mean, it is just like a massive waste of time.
I mean, even for the longest time, what is the percentage of people who graduate high school literate?
It's like really 1 in 5. It's like 20%.
It's crazy.
It's really crazy. It's and I'm not surprised by that. Functionally illiterate. Yeah. Oh, and I learned more about what that means. So I was like, how do people drive if they can't read the word stop? But really, it's they can read words, but if you get them to read too many concepts in a paragraph, they can't. They can't keep track of who's talking, what's going on.
No reading comprehension.
Wow. Oh, geez.
603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church.shiresociety.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. You can call in with whatever is on your mind. And I would like to thank Damon Freeman for being a gold-level amplifier with us. That means that Damon is helping to advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live. And if you'd like to learn more and join him, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. And thank you so much to Damon Freeman for being a supporter of ours. I really appreciate that. And with you in the studio tonight on Free Talk Live, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Nikki.
And let's just go straight to your phone calls and thoughts. We have Skeeter on in California, correct, Skeeter?
My ladies, it's your boy, Papa Skeeter.
Hey, so gross.
Libertarians criticizing everyone for lack of critical thinking. Now I've seen it all. Hey, Bonnie, you know good class to take in college? It's called economics. You might learn.
That would be pretty much a waste of my time to learn
such
Keynesian economics.
Sick burn.
Yeah.
You might actually learn something.
No, I actually have been thinking that it would be fun to go learn something, but really I don't want to go learn economics considering I know a lot about Keynesian versus Austrian economics, and I just don't want to go get indoctrinated. I want to learn like physics,
Bonnie.
Like something that's like, oh, they can't possibly be lying to me. Hopefully.
They probably could.
You don't want to go into physics, Bonnie. You trust me. There's other schools other than Austrian and Keynesian. You know that, right?
I do know that, but I also just know that like there are basically those two types that kind of rule the world. Like people talking in the media are going to be talking in Keynesian almost exclusively.
Skeeter, what kind of economic theory do you subscribe to?
He made his own.
I adopt the classical school.
Oh, I thought you said that you made your own last time you were on with Mark.
Yeah, I did. Well, but it builds off a lot of the early work of the classical school. That's the two major schools there are. There's the mainstream economics.
This is what I meant to say. I didn't mean to say that Austrian actually rules the world. It's Keynesian that rules the world, mostly in the way that the governments run things and the media. And then it's Austrian that I'm interested in. And I really don't need to go to school to learn any more about that. I basically studied it for a long time. I get the basics. I'm not going to go do a job involving it. So why would I want to keep learning it over and over again? It's kind of going to be boring. I'm interested in just other things. I don't want to sit, like, what do you want me to do? Go learn classical economics so I can argue with you on Free Talk Live all the time? It's literally boring.
You'd actually understand what I'm saying a lot better. Like, for instance...
No, you just don't answer questions. When I ask you to explain things, you just go like, libertarians are stupid.
Strawmanning me again, Bonnie. Hey, but Nikki, are you pregnant? Are you preggers?
I am, yep.
Okay, so if you're going to follow libertarian principle, you can't use a crib.
I don't think that's accurate, but I actually am against cribs, so... I mean...
Okay, and you also, and
I don't think
what?
That's a libertarian thing, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Why is that libertarian?
It's just like a prison. This is so funny.
Me and Skeeter are finally agreeing on something because I always call like cribs and pack and plays baby jails.
That's funny. Yeah, I've seen people talking about how if a pack and play is the same thing I'm thinking of, where it's kind of like the cage.
Yeah. Basically a cage. Yeah.
People talk about, oh, did you know it's way more effective if you turn it upside down?
What?
Yeah.
Or the laundry basket. Like you just put a laundry basket over
them. I hope that they're joking.
No, they're not. I was talking to a mom.
Wait, really?
No, yeah. And it's not a joke.
They're like, yeah, because eventually they learn how to climb. And,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're like, you'll get more out of your money. They won't be able to climb out of it. But then it's like, your baby can't see the stuff around.
Those
okay.
things are not meant to be like entertainment. That's like, oh no, I have to go do something very quickly. I'm going to put my kid in here so they don't get hurt.
Yeah.
It's just really sad to me to be like, I'm just going to put them underneath the basket or whatever. If people really do that with a laundry basket, that's terrible. But we do have other callers on the line. We have Tim from Florida. Tim, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I dialed in to rescue you from that call because even though I'm a big fan of Skeeter, this was his worst call ever.
Oh, yeah. He kept doing the disgusting laugh. I feel like he... I don't know, learned that he can make that disgusting noise and it freaks girls out in like high school or something.
Sounds like a goblin.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he thinks he's a super villain.
Yeah.
Mr. Green Goblin. He thinks he's Green Goblin. But what's on your mind, Tim?
No, well that I was going to walk my dog to the dispensary not the dispensary, but the smoke shop and get some kratom. They actually make these drinks down here. called M9. I don't know if you got them up there, if they distribute that far, but they're actually produced pretty locally. Mitra 9. Sometimes I get those. But
do they taste good? Because that's the only problem with kratom to me. Like, it doesn't taste good.
Yeah, they do. They do. They're basically carbonated, and they have some different flavors, like watermelon, tropical, blackberry, some other flavors.
That's pretty cool if they can make it taste good. Usually I'm either taking, like, they make these pills of it where you don't have to taste it at all, and that's great, or like a little shot of something where you just taste it for a second and just like get it down. Or the tea, if I don't know, I find that the tea's the least effective, and then it takes me like, oh, I have to drink this hot cup of tea. I don't want to do that in the summer.
What does kratom taste like?
It's very bitter. I definitely would say bitter. Mm. Like, it, to me, it's not so gross you can't possibly drink it. But I've also had a brand that was like a cheaper, crappier brand that I had to throw away. It was that bad.
Someone told me that it's best if you drink it with like hot chocolate, because something about warming it and something in the chocolate makes it absorb better into your body.
Yeah, I've gotten that on the internet, looking up what will make it absorb better, and also like turmeric and black pepper. I used to make it with black pepper. Anything else on your mind, Tim?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, with the powder, the best luck I've had is with pineapple juice, second to that, orange juice, and
grapefruit juice.
Some of the guys at the, okay, there you go. So the citrus seems to neutralize, and they actually have a lot of kratom / kava bars around here, and occasionally doing Instacart, I have delivered different juices and things to these kratom bars. And anyway, I just wanted to call in, say hi. Like I said, I was going to walk my dog to the store, but the other dog wanted to go for a walk, and I can't walk him that far. I'm going to go ahead and drop off the line here because I don't have much more to say.
Well, thank you for the call, Tim. I always like talking about kratom. We also have Creighton in Kentucky on the line. Creighton, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just have to ask, Nikki. I totally get the idea that a pack and play shouldn't be used for like more than 15 minutes, just to allow the observing parent to do small tasks like load the dishwasher or something.
Yeah.
But what my question is, if you're opposed to them and their practical use, what's your alternative that you're looking at?
Just watch your kid. I'm a big fan of baby wearing. But to each their own. Like, I'm not going to be like, it's child abuse to use, like they have those other things where it's kind of like a seat and there's like a bunch of toys.
Those are child abuse.
Around the kid.
That's bad for your kid's hips.
Yeah. So that's the hip displacement thing. I don't know. What are they called? Lori, do you know what they're called?
I don't know.
A bouncer. Baby
chairs.
Bouncer.
Oh,
yeah, it's like a little chair.
For your baby's hips?
Yeah.
It always seems like they really like it. They're like,
they do.
Around.
Yeah. They
I mean, they're babies, though, so yeah, they really have like cognitive skills yet.
Yeah, they like everything.
I've never heard
of
that. But, everything's bad.
But that's the thing. So, like, even like something like that, if you were to be like, I just really need to entertain my kids somehow, and I just need to load the dishwasher or whatever, like, I don't think it's necessarily like a bad thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't think like the exact way you guys are talking about it used wouldn't be that, but like hours and hours and like not having to take care of it.
So exactly. So I think there's responsible use of pretty much anything, like even screen time. Like, there could be a responsible use of, you know, short periods of screen time that I don't think would like really, really cognitively damage a kid or whatever. I kind of subscribe to more of a Montessori philosophy when it comes to like parenting, so that's more baby proofing an area and letting the child have full range of that entire area. So maybe putting them in a room, maybe even utilizing a baby gate to keep them in that safe area. And every single thing in that room, the baby or the toddler or the child can have access to it safely. So that's kind of more my style. So I don't really, and I'm also pretty minimalistic. So I don't want to have to buy the pack and play and the bouncer. And
I just think
there's a lot of stuff.
Most
you know?
Of it, like it like would turn your house so ugly to have like all these rainbow plastic things in it. And the way you're describing it just sounds more like nice on the brain of the babies and the parents. Like, it's stressful when you walk into somebody's house and they have all this, baby looking baby crap that's all over the floor. Doesn't that just stress you out? Like,
yeah,
if it's
I have
just
kids
like,
and it stresses me out.
But my parents had a kid when I was 13 and a kid when I was 16, and that stressed me out. Like, the living room always being that, like, disaster. It would just look so much nicer if kids played with, like, stuff that's around that makes sense to be played with. Cats do it.
yeah, you could give a cat a hair elastic.
Yeah,
and
they won't
like...
play with their toys. They will only play with random things. But
one of my friends, she's very minimalistic with her children. She has some books, a couple of toys, but for the most part, she does not have any like children stuff, like any strictly children stuff. And someone made a comment to her, like, "How do you get your kids to play outside? Like, what do your kids do?" And she's like, "They don't have like that's their fun thing. They pick up sticks.
Yeah,
they use their imagination, right. And like those are the toys. They go play with the animals on the farm or whatever. They don't
exactly
have any other option because there is none of those things.
Also, like, how many of these parents asking her don't have other kids for them to play with? Because me and my siblings could do anything together, like sitting around just being like." What if like a mushroom came in here and he was talking?
Yeah.
Or like going in the backyard and like picking up acorns and then they have cheese in it and then we're playing Cheese Factory.
Yeah.
I don't know
imagination.
What that acorn
cheese is. Yeah, but like imagination, you know?
Yep.
Pretend play. Did that answer your question, Creighton? Did you have more for us?
I have a little bit more. I just want to say that my wife and I, we did the baby wearing thing. I had the baby sling and everything. And I can say from personal experience, there is a limit to how much you can do that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you definitely don't want. It's easier, I guess, like newborn.
I was gonna say even when they're really little.
But yeah, once they start to get heavy, it's like, oh boy.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, start getting in the way and stuff.
I saw somebody doing it at Liberty Forum, and it was cute because the baby was just like really happy, strapped to the baby's mom. I just don't know if it was boy or girl. I really hate saying it talking about babies, but it always comes out of my mouth if I don't know if they're a boy or girl. And so the baby was strapped to the baby's mom. And looked really super happy, but I kept thinking, like, she looks relaxed, and that wasn't a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
How can that possibly not hurt your back? All Liberty Forum.
Yeah, it definitely...
It kind of changes your center of gravity.
Yeah.
Because the baby is on your body, and so, you know, it's not like a backpack that's hanging off you with straps or anything.
And she had her arms, like, free.
Was it, like, one of the wraps?
No, it wasn't a wrap either.
It was like a structured carrier, like a backpack-looking one.
It looked like a front-facing backpack.
Yeah.
That was like
I think the structured carrier, especially for bigger kids, those are really beneficial because they're sturdier. And I think for some people, like it kind of helps mitigate some of like the back pain that you might assume that people would have baby carrying larger children. But I'm in a baby carrying group, I guess, where people will do like fit checks to make sure there's no hip displacement or anything.
Nice.
And someone in the group, I forget the weight, but they were like, oh, what structured carrier is rated for like a 45 plus pound kid? And I wanted to be like, their legs, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. How old do you have to be 45 pounds? That's almost three of my, that is three of
that's
my dogs.
Like a that's like a toddler.
Yeah,
that's like a big kid.
3-4 years old.
Yeah.
It depends on the kid.
And it depends on the kid, but that's a, they can walk.
My dog is
walk.
15 yeah, pounds. Walk. If a baby was 15 pounds, that would get tiring. He gets tiring.
That's not that old of a baby.
15?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 45, I don't know, is a lot.
That's because you're carrying with your arms. You need to strap them to you.
Yeah. I would love that.
Strap coconut to you. Get a structured carrier for coconut.
Well, people will do that with their cats, too, and the cats love it. My cat would love that.
Well, thank you for the call, Creighton. I felt like there was something really important I wanted to say about that, but I can't remember now. Oh, yeah. I just think it's like it's nice that parents are out there actually caring about like not displacing their children's hips. I feel like it's just like people care a lot more about their kids nowadays. And it's like back in the day, people were just like, you know what? I'll do what's easy for me.
Yeah.
If this is the easiest way to carry
I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Parents. Those were my parents, like that generation, the parents of like, oh, we'll smoke in the car. You don't need seatbelts. Just like, everything's fine.
I think there's also so much more of an access to information now.
Yeah.
Where like people didn't know about hip displacement. And like your doctor was telling you. I mean, even now, because like I said, I'm in a lot of different mom groups on Facebook or whatever. And I talk to a lot of people. And some of the stuff doctors will recommend, I'm like, this is not evidence-based. Are these things that some of these pediatricians are recommending people do in regards to, like, introducing solids, and just sleeping, co-sleeping, all of that sort of, like, everything. The cry it out method, gosh, like sleep training.
Like torture.
It is torture.
I think that's really what messed up a lot of people, like in my mom's generation.
Yes, that's why they all, I don't want to generalize, that's why a lot of the baby boomers and like older Gen X people, or pretty much anybody, have a lot of like attachment and emotional issues is because of, and it's not even the parents' fault because doctors were telling them to do that, and that's like all people knew. They're like, no, you're gonna spoil the baby and all of this ridiculous
crap. So stupid.
But doctors will even still try to tell people that today, and it's like, okay, read a book, you know what I mean, like educate yourself,
or just
on
do some critical thinking,
modern practices, you know what I mean, like. And that's the like a huge qualm I have with a lot of doctors. It's like you have this like old man doctor who hasn't done any continuing education on these topics since he went to medical school in the 70s. And it's like, I'm sorry, dude, things have changed. And it's like, I'm not even, this isn't some hippy dippy stuff that I'm just, you're like, oh yeah, peaceful parenting, whatever. Like there's actual concrete evidence and data to back up these things. You know, like people aren't just making this up, like actual psychologists and doctors are researching these topics. Like this is actual evidence-based like theories.
One thing that you kind of touched on there that's been a topic I think about a lot recently is just like the idea that people think that anything like nice is bad for you. Like, oh, you're gonna spoil the baby by loving them too much.
Isn't that so sad?
It's like permeating, it has permeated a huge part of our society, and I notice it in lots of different things, like lots of people thinking like so many things that are good for you. And the thing is, like, we would probably disagree if we're talking about different like specific ingredients. It's just like so many things that make people happy, people just think is like outright bad.
Yeah,
like just like being quote unquote like lazy sometimes. Like I feel like Ian, I am not saying it's necessarily like a bad thing because he's so productive and it's like his happy place to be working and stuff. Sometimes I feel like you must have been taught that like ever stopping working is like bad, like a really bad thing. And obviously you don't want to be like a leech on society. I'm not even saying that, but like some people can't relax.
Yeah. How do I rest more productively?
Well, and that's the thing too. And like, I kind of have that where I feel like if I were to like have a day where I'm not what I think is productive, I feel incredibly guilty about
it. I do too.
Yeah, me too.
And that's why I've been thinking about that kind of thing a lot more recently.
It's important to like not do something for a day or whatever. Or you know what I mean? Like whatever your version of rest and relaxation looks like. I think that's super important to be able to incorporate that into your life.
Mm-hmm. And I really think like older generations were taught that is bad. Well, it doesn't even have to be like rest. I wish I could think of other examples, just like just never eating sugar. Like so many people just talk about sugar like it's like it is poison in and of itself. It's like everything is, it's like the poison's in the dose of almost everything.
Yeah.
Like never eating sugar is like that sounds so like an unhappy life. I'd rather be happy.
Yeah. Well, and they replace them with other sugars.
Oh, yeah.
Which is silly. Like, oh, I'm not going to eat any sugar, but I'll eat mountains of maple syrup. Like, it's still sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so stupid.
I will say, though, if I eat cane sugar, I break out really bad. Like, I'm breaking out really bad because I thought I could eat, like, bread and sugar, and I really can't.
I
can eat as much maple syrup and honey and fruit as I want. And my skin still looks good. So that, for me, I mean, people can do whatever they want. Not having acne is like one of my top priorities.
I just think it's funny that people actually sometimes don't think that maple syrup is sugar.
Yeah, it totally
they
is.
They definitely affect your body differently because they're different chemical compounds.
Yeah, but
like
I'm not going to
like
chug a whole thing of maple syrup and be like, I'm healthy.
Right, yeah,
you know,
that's what
like
they do.
Moderation,
I was talking about the people who just don't even think that they can eat maple syrup. It's just bad because it's sugar. It's
okay, so like the opposite.
Your brain needs sugar to survive.
Yeah, that's so sad to not eat maple syrup.
And everybody who I say that to, that your brain needs sugar to survive, they say, oh, well, your body will make other things into sugar, which is true, but it's actually not your body's preferred method.
Right.
And that's why it's stressful to the body. It's stressful to the body to go through a whole process and make things it would have used for other purposes in sugar.
And it's not as effective. It's, you know, it's just not very efficient.
Yeah.
Like you can get, what is it that you can turn into B12? Is it flax?
Oh, I don't know.
Or vitamin
D? Or into omega-3s, sorry, is what I was thinking of. Flax or whatever, you can turn it into omega-3s because it has a
It's like
reaction.
The vegan alternative or whatever.
But it's not as good. Like it doesn't work as well in your body as animal omega-3.
So, and that's the thing too with like things like iron.
Mm-hmm.
So plant-based iron sources can't... for some people, like just literally cannot be absorbed into the body. Right. So you're actually excreting a lot of those nutrients because your body just doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Whereas animal-based iron sources,
and even worse,
your body knows exactly what to do with it instantly.
And the amount,
even worse than excreting the iron is your body putting it into your tissues.
Yeah. So that's the other thing where the body can't process it, and then it just stores it. So then you're at the same time iron deficient and iron toxic.
But your doctor is going to be like, you need to take iron because it's not in your blood. It's not in your blood because it's in your tissue.
Yeah.
And you're just going to get, it's toxic.
A lot of the things that have like plant-based iron, like spinach and stuff, have oxalates too. And then you're overloading on oxalates to try to get the amount of iron that you need. And you're getting kidney stones and all kinds of other damage to your body.
That's something I found that I literally just don't need in my diet and can live without it is like non-fermented, any kind of, I forget the word, cruciferous vegetable?
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Cruciferous, yeah.
603-283-6160. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Don't go anywhere. It's 603-283-6160. Control and 603-283-6160 is the number you can call to get in on the conversation with us on this last segment of Free Talk Live tonight. 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Fork Fest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. Fork Fest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Nikki.
And let's go into the phones. We have Alu from here in New Hampshire. Alu, what's on your mind?
Hi, guys. A few things. I want to say how much I love Liberty at Night with Nate and Chuck.
Nice.
They're awesome.
That's our show that plays on Free Talk Live, the Free Talk Live network now on Tuesdays, for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, it's become one of my favorite podcasts, and they're, like, the funniest people.
Yeah.
And I consider myself and our podcast kind of funny, but they're, like, so funny. I'm, like, laughing half the time throughout the whole podcast. It's awesome.
They seem awesome.
I could get on an interview or something. I would love to get in touch with them.
Is that the Good Morning Liberty people?
Yep.
I've listened to their like original podcast before, and you're right, they are very funny.
They seem like they're actual best friends, and they have good
they're like
chemistry.
Cool, like genuine cool people. I like that.
Yeah, so I would love to get in touch with them somehow. It would be incredible to be on their show sometime.
Oh yeah, I could do that. I could get you in touch with them.
That would be awesome. Okay. My next complaint is that I think you are doing the Dash live read ad like twice. I think Ian does it, and then, well, Ian Freeman's recording, and then you come back, and sometimes they'll do it also.
That's the thing. The radio stations aren't getting our ads, so we have to read it as a live read.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay. My other complaint is about Nate and Chuck, and they don't know how to pronounce Chaya's name. Chaya Rachik is pronounced Chaya.
I don't know who that is or how to pronounce it either.
Lips of TikTok?
oh, that person. Even know that that person had a name that was public, you know.
Anonymous.
He was my neighbor. He lives in Brooklyn.
Whoa. That's crazy.
And her name is pronounced Chaya, so you got to say the Ches. So people call her Chaya or Kaya.
Oh, no, I don't even know how it's spelled.
Yeah.
Is it CH?
Yeah, I'll tell you offline how to pronounce it. Yes.
Okay.
It's Hebrew. It's Hebrew with a chet, but in English we write with a CH usually, Chaya.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a pretty name, but I wouldn't have known either. I would have thought it was Kaya.
Yeah, the other complaint is that not everyone in the world listens to the Liberty Block podcast yet, and I've heard that anyone who doesn't listen to it is not a real libertarian.
Where can they go to
find
it?
That's what I heard, too.
Yeah, it's on all the podcast apps and Rumble and Facebook and Odyssey.
The Liberty Block podcast, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's a block. Just the Liberty Block.
And that's you and your dad, correct? Or is it you and whoever at the time?
Yeah, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 regular co-hosts. It's once a week, the show, like an hour and a half. My dad is the main host. We have a bunch of co-hosts who are brilliant attorneys, some like PhD, DOD contractors who give really good insight. We have our foreign correspondent from Ukraine come in once in a while. So last week he came in with a report from Ukraine, which was awesome. He told us what was going on. So we have a bunch of, correspondents doing awesome news, and we get to good debates and stuff. So it's
and Olu's dad, if you haven't met him, is really cool and like such a sweet and funny person. So he's a good person to listen to on his podcast.
Yeah, thank you. So people are welcome to come in and debate us and stuff. Like, my dad and the others are all pretty conservatarian. Some are more libertarian on some issues, and they all disagree on a bunch of issues. But they always love debate from everyone. So they'll have anyone on the show and debate anything.
That's great. That's always better than echo chambers.
Yeah.
That's one thing I mean, about the open phones on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I mean, we all love debating. Me and my father and my little brother, we're all debating very vigorously just before the show this evening. For a while, all yelling at each other in a three-way phone call, so that was awesome.
I bet that broke the sound barrier.
Yeah, that wasn't even like for the podcast or anything. That was just...
No, we were
just
yelling at each other because we were debating laws, and we were all debating. We all really agreed that judges and the government's corrupt, but we all disagreed a tiny bit on a few tiny points, and that's why we all yelled at each other.
And then you became enemies for life?
Yes, me and my father and little brother are now enemies for life.
Yep, no more Thanksgiving. Sorry.
Did you have anything else for us today, Olu?
No, I think that's all. Check out libertybox.com and all the books and everything. And thank you very much. And keep up the good work.
Yeah, in case anybody didn't know who listens to the show, Olu's a regular caller. He does have books he's written. My personal favorite one is, I forgot what it's called. I was going to say Due Process, so I messed myself up. It's Presumed Guilty. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. That's
a good one. Yeah.
Okay, so... Next caller is an unscreened caller. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
It's Tom, and I was just thinking that...
Tom in New Hampshire.
There's politicians who are complaining that Joe Biden...
Can you back off the phone? I'm not trying to be mean, but like you're making the phones clip. You're screaming into the phone. You might be too close to it physically.
Yeah, well, it's about... The Republicans, the Trump Republicans, are criticizing Joe Biden for a crisis at the border. Too many of God's children are moving to the United States of America, which is supposed to be the land of the free. And we can't have that because they were born outside certain lines on the map.
Hmm.
And it dawns on me that with the government at all levels, manipulating economic activity from A to Z, from agricultural subsidies to zoning restrictions. Oh, vote for me, and I'll stop them from opening that factory in, quote, your, unquote, neighborhood that would put 1,000 people to work. We can't have all these working people transiting all along a public way to get to and from work. Can't have that happen. It's open corruption. Buying votes by trampling other people's rights and buying votes with stolen money.
I also really hate that idea that people think that there shouldn't be, like you've called in before and you said that there are people that complain that there shouldn't be cars driving loudly past your house in your neighborhood, just stuff like that. Like, you should pay more attention when you're buying a house. You should also be able to mitigate things like people making noises. It's like whenever I hear birds chirping outside my window, that is absolutely like I cannot sleep when that's happening. So you know what I do? I turn on a fan noise and then I sleep like a baby. Like, it's like you should be able to take care of yourself as an adult. But there are people who think, oh, there shouldn't be people allowed to make a factory near my house and work there. That would be too noisy near my house and stuff like that. And it's just like, maybe you should, I don't know, have paid attention when you bought the property.
The public way. And you do not have a right to not have people go up and down a public way. We would never catch the people protesting you driving vehicles on a public way. Oh, no, they would never do such a wicked thing. But, it, I mean, it's open corruption from A to Z, where they're manipulating economic activity. They're providing subsidized housing because there's a housing shortage, but the housing shortage is caused by zoning restrictions. And very few people, when they get their paycheck, have anything on the stub that says how much the employer has to pay for the health insurance, because it's just the portion, the tip of the iceberg that the employee is paying. And that's just the way Big Pharma prefers it. They prefer that people not know just how expensive health insurance really is. And a lot of people are in the dark about that.
It's also unnaturally made to be extremely expensive. Me and Ian were talking about this just yesterday, how like I went to the hospital just to, you know, have an IV in my arm with saline to them to watch me. And then they found out, oh, I was just probably throwing up because of a salad I ate at work. And it was $8,000, allegedly. It's just so stupid. It's all made up. David in New Mexico, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Lots of stuff, Bonnie. Whoa, it's crazy.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Crazy. It's ridiculous crazy.
What's on your mind, actually?
Lots of stuff, Bonnie. Whoa, crazy.
Well, just name one.
Would you like to try again?
Just name one thing that's on your mind, please.
No, not just one thing. First of all, I got to ask you, did Alu start a snack bar yet?
Alu snack bar. I think you've said that before, and I don't really. Oh, yeah, it's Alu Akbar. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. It's a snack bar. What is Alu Akbar?
Okay, I think that I get your joke. Alu Akbar is a thing that Muslims say, and his name is Alu.
Oh, yeah, that might have been it. And to help you out with, he was trying to coach you how to pronounce, what is it, Kaya? You just got to do it. You just got to pretend you're a kitty cat, and you got a hairball, and you just do the hairball, and then Kaya. And then that comes out pretty good.
Reminds me of that Jeff Dunham skit where the undead terrorist is like coaching people on how to pronounce his name. He goes, Phlegm.
I don't know that one. But okay. David, do you have anything really good to talk about?
You were talking about serious things like parenting, and mm-hmm. I had something helpful to share, I believe. But first of all, I got to say, I heard you just a minute ago, you were talking about zoning, like somebody should complaining about moving into a neighbor or a factory moving in. What were you saying?
I was just thinking that it is silly that people think they own the land all around their house and not just the land that they own. Like, I can't imagine thinking, like, they shouldn't be allowed to build a factory in my neighborhood because I might hear cars driving by. You have the freedom to move.
Okay, well, I don't agree with you because this is a real example, like, right now. So, like, I live out in nature, and it's like, other than the plane going over, jet, and they got to stop that. No more jets going over, not over my land, anywhere near the land, because it's zoning. But it's like just perfectly quiet, not a sound. Except we had these neighbors moved in, and I would call them white trash neighbors, except they're black, so they're not white trash neighbors. And what they do, and any minute now, they're probably going to fire up their generator because it's off the grid. There's not electricity out here. So they move out off the grid where it's just nothing but nature and it's quiet. And then they think it's okay because they don't have electricity because they chose to move off the grid. They think it's okay that when they need electricity, they fire up a generator and everybody within a mile, literally a mile away, you hear this instead of quiet.
What kind of is it?
I mean,
how big of a radius do you think you should be able to control the noise of around your house?
All of it. All the radius.
Why?
Because, I mean, well, first of all, because it's, you know, the concept of rude, right?
That's the thing. I think you should be totally in your right to go talk to these neighbors and try to convince them differently. But ultimately, like, you could leave.
Yeah. So that's all you got to do to get rid of people that you don't like is move into where they are and then do all the things that you know that they hate. And then they have to leave. What do they call that? White flight?
I know.
It just sounds stupid. And like an immature way to handle a dispute.
Yeah, it also seems like it just wouldn't affect. It doesn't feel like it would bother me that much.
I did the mature way. I went with the within a couple of days of them moving in. I walked over there and I helped them out with all the stuff that I could see. We're gonna bite them in the rear end, like their solar panels. We're gonna get first. They're gonna get blown off their roof, and then if they're down on the ground, the cows were gonna trample them. And so I helped them out with everything that they need, so they didn't have to learn the hard way. I spent like over 2 hours over there the first day I went over there, showing them all the things that it took me months to figure out so that they wouldn't get burned. And so, you know, great, you know, happy times. And then a few days later or whatever, they all of a sudden they fire up this generator. So I'm like, oh no. And so I go over there and I can talk, you know, like Nikki said, the mature way, talk nice to them about, you know, hey, this, can you do this? Kind of like this. And so they did a little bit, but not nearly enough. And then they did it for a little while. And then they slacked off, and it got, you know, because, you know, time passes and they probably forgot about it. But I didn't forget about it, because how can you forget about it?
So why do they even need the generator? I know this is like kind of like not really important to the story, but I just need to know why their solar panels don't work.
It is important to the story. I'm glad you asked, because that's actually part of my point. When I explain this to different people, including the county, because the county's got noise regulations and stuff like that. But the way that I explain, they don't need the generator. And we tried to explain that to them, that if they just buy a few more solar panels, they can do everything they're doing with the generator without the generator. But they just won't do it.
Maybe they don't have enough money.
Yeah, maybe if it's super important to you and the neighbors for peace and quiet, maybe you guys could buy them the solar panels, or you guys could buy them a quiet generator.
Yeah.
And then everyone's problem is solved.
We did. The dude that's even closer to them had built, he has a generator too, that he doesn't use it all the time. But first of all, let me answer Nikki's question fully. They use it mainly because they got a big deep freezer, you know, like a 6 foot long, 3 foot wide.
So they're using a lot of power, yeah.
Yeah, and they got a 50-inch big screen TV on the wall of their 30-foot long camper.
Why would you move to the middle of nowhere to have a giant big screen TV?
That's weird.
That is weird.
Also, like, if you're trying to be off grid, you should be like, you know, understand that those things suck a huge amount of electricity, and you're not going to do very well off grid if you have those. You know,
I can't say that like I don't understand David's frustration here. It sounds really annoying, especially when people are just annoying you and then not listening to you. Like, kind, if David's side is truly accurate, that he went up to them and kindly asked them certain things, but it's also, it doesn't really seem like there's anything they can do about it now. They didn't think about it ahead of time. It's just like, honestly, to me, I just can't see it possibly being that noisy. Like, it's like, unless they moved in like 20 feet from your house, a generator.
Well, he's also in the desert, right? So there's nothing to really, I could see that the sound could maybe travel.
Yeah, but
far.
It's like, how loud can a generator be? Even if you're sitting right next to it, it wouldn't be like the sound of, you know, like a concert. So why is it that big of a deal?
Some of them are pretty loud.
And especially if you're used to like complete silence.
Yeah,
I can kind of understand.
Don't have the right
but still.
To that complete silence.
And then that's the thing. Like, I totally get his frustrations. That sucks.
That's what I'm saying.
But
it might be annoying, but it seems like he's overblowing it because he likes to be annoyed.
Yeah, you should take a tip from Bonnie's book and just play the fan sound on your phone or whatever.
Yeah, if anything, that's a white noise already. You have the generator sound getting rid of the stupid bird sounds, which are so much worse. So, Lori, what did you have to tell us about this, another thing that's stupid, this stupid law in Missouri? It's just actually kind of blowing my mind to even think about the idea of this law.
So this is from The Guardian. Missouri law prevents divorce during pregnancy, even in cases of violence.
What? Who is that supposed to be good for?
I don't know.
It's like the baby is going to be affected by stress, yes. But if you're forcing people to stay together, that's stress.
That's literally bad for like all three parties.
Yeah.
Baby, mom, dad.
Yeah, everybody.
Everybody. Kids that already exist. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. The statute, which can lead to reproductive coercion in a state that has banned abortion, has recently gained nationwide attention.
That's a good point. A woman can be like, oh, you want to divorce me? Oops, forgot to take my birth control like the last week.
Or the husband can be like, oh, you want to divorce me?
Somebody.
Now you're pregnant.
Yeah, you know? Somebody could fake, or not fake being pregnant. Maybe.
Oh, maybe
I mean,
fake
could
it.
Even fake being pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Jeez. Just a few weeks before, you know, and it starts to get really obvious, but still.
I mean, you'd be surprised. There was like a whole drama on the internet of this woman who pretended to be pregnant for like 40 months or something.
What?
And her husband was also just like totally okay with it.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's also a Dr. Phil episode where with these chicks that were like, had like the gestation of an elephant.
Yeah.
And we're like, I'm pregnant. And they're like, yeah, you've been saying that for like 5 years. And we're actually really concerned about your health because like you do look pregnant.
I was just
but
thinking,
we did like 7 ultrasounds and you're not.
I was just thinking the other day, like, thank God that doesn't happen where people are just like, yeah, I'm just still pregnant. It just like hasn't come. And it's like 2 years later. Like that just doesn't happen. And
I mean,
thank
it kind of happens.
Wait, yeah. What?
They get like mummified fetus.
Oh.
Yeah, sometimes
so
people
the
are
baby
like
will
pregnant.
Die?
Yeah, the baby dies and then like it calcifies in there.
And people won't know. Uh-huh.
I mean, they'll be like, well, I didn't have my baby and like just keep living their lives. It's happened.
Oh.
And then they just have like a mummy baby inside of them.
That's terrifying. Like,
yeah, that's like.
Well, I just went with the baby alive being like, I'm not going to come out yet.
And then like chest burst out of you.
Oh my God.
Eventually it would get too big to be in there.
It's terrifying. I guess it would keep growing. But yeah, I'm just glad that that doesn't just happen.
I also am glad that that does not happen.
The gestation does come to an end eventually.
Yeah.
One way or another.
It doesn't feel like it at the end, but it does. So it says, at 6 months pregnant, H decided enough was enough. She had endured years of abuse from her husband and had recently discovered he was also physically violent toward her child.
Oh, no.
She contacted an attorney to help her get a divorce, but she was stopped short. Her lawyer told her that she could not finalize a divorce in Missouri because she was pregnant. I just absolutely felt defeated, she said. H returned to the house that she shared with her abuser, sleeping in the child's room on the floor and continuing to face violence. But, okay, why didn't she just leave?
I was going to say, why would she need official divorce to leave?
Yeah.
That's confusing. But right. Is it because she needs to take the money from him or something? But that'll take a while.
Yeah. On the night before she gave birth, she slept in the most secure room in the house, on the tile floor in the basement with the family's dogs. Oh, maybe so she could force him out of the house?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Under a Missouri statute that has recently gained nationwide attention, every petitioner for divorce is required to disclose their pregnancy status. In practice, experts say those who are pregnant are barred from legally dissolving their marriage. The application of the law is an outright ban, said Daniel Drake, attorney at Parks and Drake. When Drake learned her then husband was having an affair, her own divorce stalled because she was pregnant. Two other states have similar laws, Texas and Arkansas.
Wow, so, I've never heard anything about that in Texas, but Texas is the 50th in personal freedoms, so it makes sense.
Yeah, Texas is. Did you hear that Pornhub banned Texas?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I did not hear that.
So you can't go on Pornhub in Texas now?
Yeah.
Because I don't remember what the reason was. Something they were actually taking a pretty libertarian stance because they said something about like that the Texas legislature is keeping your right from viewing free speech, which they are calling porn.
So they're saying that people in Texas have to verify. Texas is saying you have to verify your age to go on these websites.
Oh, okay.
And so Pornhub is saying that is a violation of your personal information.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to play.
It is, so.
Yeah. It continues to say, it took H 3 months after the birth of her second child to muster the finances and courage to file for divorce again. She believes that had she been able to obtain a divorce when she first tried, she would have been able to leave an abusive environment many months earlier. The original intent of the statute in Missouri, which originated in 1973, was noble. Ashley Oon, a Democratic representative, said, as it tried to ensure that a mother and her child were provided for by settling custody arrangements and child support after the child's birth. But in
practice, seems so obviously dumb.
Yeah, it doesn't even make any sense. Being married doesn't mean he's going to take care of you.
Yeah,
it means nothing. Like, it literally doesn't mean anything. You're signing a piece of paper saying, you know, we're besties forever, and the only thing that it really affords you is medical rights.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the only reason I got married is because of medical rights. If something happens, I get first say of what happens, not some doctor who's a stranger.
Exactly. Yeah, I think like actual marriage, especially for like people that are religious, like that has a true, real meaning. Mm-hmm. Legal marriage is just like you said. Right. It's like, oh, this just makes a few things easier. So that's, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It just makes things easier and safer for someone in an emergency, a medical emergency.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we would have just stayed together forever without that document.
Exactly.
But in practice, it has created barriers for pregnant people seeking divorce. The precise number of women the current statute affects is unknown. No entity collects this information. But the Problem Synergy Services, a nonprofit that provides supportive services to people experiencing violence in the greater Kansas City, said they regularly receive requests for support from pregnant women unable to divorce abusive husbands because of the law.
It's not surprising to me that a politician would try to make their law sound like they made it for, you know, a noble cause, as she put it. I almost don't believe her that she actually believes that, because, of course, a politician's going to say, oh, I put this in for a noble cause, and I was trying to help women. Why specifically just women? Why not, like, the women and the men? Like,
yeah,
you know,
right?
It's just kind of, like, a weird thing, and I feel like that's just some political lingo going on there. She wants to make herself look good and seem useful, even though politicians are completely useless. They're the parasite class of the useful people in the world. It's been Free Talk Live. You can learn more at freetalklive.com, and we'll be back on tomorrow. Peace.
Want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate? Well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.